Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, December 10th, 2017. This is episode 1447. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Capterra. Find software solutions for your business needs. Capterra is a free website, free, with over 500 categories of business software and hundreds of thousands of ratings and reviews from software users just like you. Visit capterra.com/techguy today. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about tech, you know, computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that rigmarole, those doodads and gewgaws that change our lives, and they're fun in the toy store, really, but serious toys. My phone number, if you want to talk about tech, 8888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536, toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada outside that area. Use Skype out, and you can call that number, and it'll be free. You can also visit the website, techguylabs.com. And if you feel a need to talk to other listeners as we do the show, irc.twit.tv. That's our official chat room. Lots of fans in there, and I'm frankly watching it during the show, and I get all my best ideas from the chat room, irc.twit.tv. And the website, again, techguylabs.com. You want to remember that so you don't have to write anything down. I thought this was, in some couple of ways, a red letter week for technology, a week that I wouldn't be surprised if 10, 20, 30 years from now, we look back on it and say, yep, that was it. That was the tipping point, the turning point, the time when everything changed. Now, I can't finish that sentence. It's either going to be for the better or for the worse. I don't know about that part. And no, I'm not talking about Bitcoin. I'm talking about artificial intelligence. So you may remember, I mean, let's, the history of computers playing games goes back quite a way. In fact, it was almost 20 years ago, wasn't it, that Deep Blue, the IBM chess-playing robot that later became Watson and learned how to play Jeopardy. But Deep Blue beat Garry Kasparov, the world chess champion, and really changed everybody's opinion of what a computer could do. But I have to say, that is not artificial intelligence, not the way Deep Blue was playing. In fact, some people even cried foul because they said, well, you actually trained it to play against Kasparov specifically, to have strategies and style that would flummox the world champion. That's not fair. Fast forward about 20 years, and a computer named AlphaGo was it last year or this year? I guess it was this year. For the first time ever, a computer beat the world champion in Go. It took him 20 years. Chess is fairly simple compared to Go. Go is a Japanese game that is very open-ended and very difficult. And really, although a computer can calculate chess positions so fast that it can look 20 or 30 moves ahead, Go is much more difficult to do that. So that was a big deal, AlphaGo beating the world champion. But then this was a Google computer. But they weren't satisfied. The artificial intelligence gurus at Google said, we're going to do more. And this week they published a paper talking about what they did next. They took AlphaGo and they evolved it to AlphaZero. Now, AlphaGo had been provided with many, many games of Go to learn the basics and then trained itself after that. AlphaZero was only taught the rules. That's all. They said, here's what you're trying to do. Go have at it. You figure out how to play. It played itself millions of games a second. And within 4 hours, Remember, its predecessor took several months to train. Within 4 hours, evolved so it could beat AlphaGo, the computer that beat the world champion of Go. And then it taught itself chess. And after 4 hours, it beat the best chess-playing computer, the world champion chess-playing program, Stockfish. And then it said, actually, I have to correct myself. 8 hours to beat AlphaGo, 4 hours to beat Stockfish. Then it said, you know, I got a little time. I got nothing else to do. 2 hours, it learned a Japanese version of chess that's actually quite fun. And much like chess, very strategic, called Shogi, and defeated one of the best computers around. So a couple of days. And here's why I think this is a watershed moment. For artificial intelligence, for computers, thinking computers really to work, they can't rely on us. They need to learn, right? Learning is key. We can only teach them so much. In fact, this is, I would say, almost a failed branch of artificial intelligence. For many decades, there's been a project, I don't know if it's even still going, I think it might be, to just enter all the world's knowledge into a computer and hope it would just at some point go, oh, and the light would come on and it would be smart. And this has been a failure. Training computers with examples. We're doing it. Google's doing it. If you ever use Google Photos, which I talk about all the time and I love, you can, you know, type any search term in there. You could type, for example, dogs. And Google Photos, having been trained now on billions of photos from all of us, has learned what a dog looks like and will give you all your pictures of dogs. It'll throw a few kitty cats and wolves in there, but basically it's pretty good. But that's a different kind of AI. That's an AI that's been training on real stuff. This is new. And I think this is kind of an important leap for artificial intelligence. Maybe a scary leap, I don't know. There are those, like the physicist Stephen Hawking and entrepreneur Elon Musk, who say, be afraid, be very afraid. And then there are those, mostly people working in actual artificial intelligence scientists, who say, no, no, no. We just unplug it if it gets out of hand. No. And then there's the movies and the science fiction. And we all know what happens there. But it's really interesting because at this point, and I am no artificial intelligence scientist, but at this point, it's my understanding that if you were to, you know, look into the code that runs this new Alpha Zero, it's not human readable. It has developed its own learning. And we've already seen two computers at Google working together on a problem, developing their own language, also impenetrable to humans. So this, to me, is a week that will go down in history. And 20 years from now, we may look back and say, you know, December 2017, that's when the machines got smart. The other reason this is of concern, at least to me of concern, and science fiction of concern, is because once machines can teach themselves and each other, they work at much, well, you can see, at a much faster clip. To manually train AlphaGo to play Go took months of, you know, patiently feeding it game after game. AlphaZero said, no, I don't need to do that. Let me just play a whole bunch of games, and I bet I'll get better and better and better, faster and faster and faster. And it did. And again, I don't, you know, maybe it's not scary. The people who work in this field aren't at all intimidated by this. But the notion to me that we don't know what's going on inside that black box, that computer. We can't look at it and say, oh, yeah, see how it figured that out? You can't really. It's not human readable. It's not designed for humans. That worries me just the tiniest bit. I don't want to, you know, I mean, I don't know what there is to do about it. I think it's fascinating. And certainly, most experts say, don't worry, these will be very limited. They're dumb, really, just like all computers, but they're very good in a particular realm. And this will be more and more useful to humans. Okay, if you say so. It's going to be good. It's going to be good. I have to say, I, for one, look forward to being able to talk to my Amazon Echo and have a nice conversation. Just, you know, be friend in the house. And I'm sure that will happen in my lifetime. And I'm old, so not long, 10, 20 years, we'll be having nice conversations with these computers. They may not be thinking internally as we do. Remember the movie Her? Scarlett Johansson, the artificial intelligence, she got together with the other ones, and they all just kind of went off on their own. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, your call's next. They just went off. Eh. They didn't really even care. Eh. We don't need... Eh. We'll see you. See you later. See you around. See you around like a donut.
Run. They run out after a few years.
Hello there, Kim Schaffer.
Huh?
Huh?
What?
Huh?
Oh.
I'm just saying hi.
I am? Hi.
I'm just saying hi. I'm just saying hi. I'm just saying hi. I'll talk to you in a minute.
Caught me off guard.
I know. Don't worry. I'm not jumping on you.
John was saying spoiler to the movie, and I said I think the statute of limitations runs out.
I do. Yeah, it is a spoiler, but it's not a big spoiler. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number, and if you call that number, guess who will answer the phone? The lovely and talented Kim Schaffer. Hello, Kim.
Happy Sunday to you.
Happy Sunday. We're eating fruit roll-ups for grown-ups.
They're delicious.
Brought all the way from Maui. Wow, these are good. Thank
Strawberry,
you, Pat.
Strawberry, coconut, and something.
Yeah. I had to eat it before we... I couldn't eat it before I went on the air because I would be chewing. But yeah. They're really delicious. So, that was your reward.
Thank you.
For lining up fabulous callers for us. And who should I start with?
I think Paul in L.A., he has a problem with an old iPod, and he needs to get some material off of it.
An old iPod. An old iPod.
That he's afraid to turn on. So.
Uh-oh. I don't blame you. Thank you, Kim. Hi, Paul. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. You and I have, first of all, it's wonderful to speak to you again. It's been, it's probably been 3 or 4 years. You might remember my call. I'm the guy who called about 3-4 years ago. I have an iPod that had a bunch of World War II veteran interviews on it.
Oh, yeah.
And I wanted to, you know, figure out a way to transfer all those interviews. Many of these men are now deceased, from the iPod on, you know, onto a hard drive
somewhere, so you can recover them and then ideally put them on a website so people can hear them.
Right. Well, so
the greatest generation. You've got them on tape.
Yes. In fact, I belong to a veterans group, and we just lost two of our World War II vets in the last 2 weeks. We've got probably a dozen left in our group, including two Pearl Harbor survivors.
Wow.
One of whom will be 99 in February, and wow, another one's going to be giving his presentation this coming Wednesday at our meeting. But I digress. When I called you a few years ago, I was concerned about how I could transfer them off there. And I don't have a computer or anything, but one of these days I'm going to get one. But the other day I was playing the iPod, and I did, you know, I have tons of music on it. That stuff is replaceable. But now it won't even let me charge it. When I plug it in, it says there's a little faint light. It says plug into your computer. I mean, it's almost deader than that proverbial doornail. And I'm afraid, I mean, I just don't know what to do. You know, I don't want to open
Which generation iPod is it, do you know?
It's an old 60 gig, and I bought it when I was living in Taiwan in 2005 or 6. So
pretty old.
I think it's probably third or fourth, maybe.
You can look on the back, and it will tell you. You can either do a serial number lookup at the Apple site, but there's also a model number on it. I have the original iPod right here, and it's still... It's a FireWire cable, but it still charges and runs. But, you know, one of the reasons is because I haven't used it since 2002.
Right.
So every lithium ion battery has a number of charge cycles. Once you exceed that, it just won't hold a charge.
Yes, and
so if you could get it powered up, I wish you had done this when we talked, because if you get it powered off, you could pull everything off of it and
right,
then discard it.
Right.
Because it's done. But now you have stuff on here that you can't get off.
Right. I'm looking at it now. It is 60 gig, and on the back it has a serial number. It says copyright 2005 Apple computer. So yeah, it's. But yeah, so I'm afraid if I take it up. Someone said if you take the battery out, you're going to erase everything. So I haven't done any of that.
That's not true. So
it's not true. Okay.
I'm not sure which iPod this is, but I think of that vintage, it has, believe it or not, an actual spinning hard drive in it.
It does.
Yeah,
it
the originals
does.
Did.
Right.
They made these one-inch tiny little hard drives. The good news is you can open it up. That hard drive is non-volatile, doesn't need power to save anything in there.
Okay.
So the guy who told you that was mistaken. It's not like RAM where if it's not powered, it'll go away. It's on there. So you can pull that hard drive, and you probably can connect it up to a computer and pull what's on it off. Now, I'm nervous about it because you don't want to lose it.
Right, right. And, yeah, well, as I said, when I did plug it in, and I used to plug it in, I could hear the hard drive whirring.
This is a good...
It just says plug into a computer.
Yeah, this is a good candidate for a trip to the Apple store.
Okay.
And I know they're going to say, well, we didn't even exist when you bought this. However, I think when you tell them this story, really the genius at the Genius Bar, that's what Apple calls their tech support personnel in the store, they have a lot of leeway. Mm-hmm. And if you tell them an interesting story and they're going to be challenged by this, they can do it. They have the tools in the back there to open it up because you kind of pry it open, take the hard drive out, and almost certainly they have the tools to access it. Now, I may be wrong. You may go in there and they may shake their head and say, wait, there's nothing we can do for you. But in my opinion, the first stop is to the Apple store. And at the very least, they should offer you, they can, for a fee, put a new battery in it.
Okay.
And that would get it working again. But what I really would like them to do is really go all the way, because you don't care about this iPod. You care about the right. You care about the contents.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think it's not going to be a problem to pull the stuff off of it. It requires the right tools and connections.
Well,
and,
Leo.
Yeah.
When I had called originally 3-4 years ago, that was the thing when it was still somewhat operating. I was wishing I could take the stuff off the iPod and put onto a computer, but I remember Apple, someone told me at Apple years ago that no, this is proprietary.
No, that's Apple's story. There's software. There's Ecamm makes a software that'll do this as iPhone View. There's also, if you have a Mac, a program called Sanuti, and of course you can always connect it up to an iTunes on a computer and it will pull the data off of it. So there are plenty of ways to get it out.
So if I plug it in, if it's plugged into a computer, I mean, even with this warning on the screen,
what I would like, one thing you could do that would be non-risky up to a point. And I'm going to tell you the real risk point.
Okay.
But if you have a friend who has a computer with iTunes on it,
okay,
and you can connect this thing to that computer. I don't remember if that in that era it was still FireWire, if they had moved to the 30-pin connector.
I think it's 30-pin.
Okay,
I'm not a big computer guy, but I'm looking at the bottom.
It'll be a slot instead of a kind of a...
Yes,
yeah.
It's a
slot. That's the 30-pin. So that those cables are still widely available. You'd connect that to his USB port and run iTunes. And truthfully, that's providing power to the iPod. So it may, in fact, just say, oh, good, I can work. And then iTunes, now here's the risk, which is frustrating. Apple has it set up so that it could erase it, and it'll warn you. It'll say, I don't recognize this iPod. You have two choices. They don't want people to bring iPods around and copy files off. That's why bringing it to the store is the safest thing to do.
Okay.
But if you're seeing something on the screen, that means you can power it.
Well, I have a separate little charger that plugs into the wall, and then I plug it directly into the pin, 30-pin.
Right.
And that used to charge it, but now that doesn't. That won't do anything.
It doesn't stay charged, but at least it turns on the screen, which means it's getting power. I think the safest thing, take it to Apple and beg them. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. They should. If you intrigue them, and I think this is a great story, you tell them what you just told me about the vets and all that. The genius should give you some help, and if he doesn't, go back and ask another guy. Now, there's another way you can go with it. There are third-party iPhone repair places that might be able to handle an iPod.
Yeah, that's as I said, I have probably 8,000 or 9,000 songs on it, but that's I have all that stuff.
You don't want the songs; you want the interviews.
I have all that stuff on CD.
Yeah.
It's just these interviews. Yeah.
I understand. This is why this whole Apple thing of, oh, yeah, you know, if you plug it into a different. So this doesn't happen anymore with iPhones. But in the old days, with an iPod, once you'd connected it to a particular computer and copied songs onto it, if you put it on another computer, this is an anti-piracy scheme. It would say, oh, no, you can't copy anything off of here.
Right.
Now, Apple can do it, and if you have Sonuity or some other tool, you can do it. But iTunes itself will erase it before it attaches to a new iTunes, and that's to prevent piracy.
Well, you had mentioned originally the initial call years ago. Yeah, you mentioned a couple websites, and I took note of that. And of course, I know the stuff's all on your website, so if I ever go back, I could.
And we'll put it up again. It's Sonuity is iTunes backwards. That's a Mac program.
Right.
There are Windows programs with similar capabilities.
But when I saw this on the screen just about a week ago, you know, please plug in.
Now's the
time.
Computer.
Oh, my goodness.
Don't delay.
This stuff is just so priceless.
Leave it plugged in. Plugging in the computer worries me because that does mean it can't read the hard drive. But so I'm there's no one better at this than Apple.
Okay.
The real problem is because it's such an old device.
Right. Yeah.
See, now, you had at some point connected it to a computer.
Yes, I did. Yes. But the last time I did that, it's probably been maybe 2 years at my twin sister's house, but I can't do that now. She's in Montecito, where they're getting evacuated today.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I was able to put stuff on a couple CDs onto this iPod from CDs on her computer. So I had thought about taking it to Apple, but I figured I'll call you first because
they're going to be the best, and I just can't promise you cooperation from them. It's going to really take a friendly genius.
Right. Well,
but if you just tell them the story and you say, you know, I just want to get those interviews off of here. Do you know of any way to do it? And he may say, we don't have the tools anymore because that was, you know, 12 years ago. He may say, yeah, I can do it. I don't know.
Do you think calling Apple itself, maybe headquarters?
Yeah, that couldn't hurt.
Right, right.
That couldn't hurt because at least at least that's an opening. And they probably will say, make an appointment and go into the Apple store.
Leo, I just in closing, I want to say, and I don't know if this part's going to be recorded, but I just want to say thank you for everything you do, it's you're a real delight to listen to. I don't own a TV or a computer or anything, but the former by choice. But I listen to the radio sometimes, especially I listen to you on the weekends, and I just want to say thank you from my heart for all you do to help our fellow human beings
out there. Thank you.
Really
very
deeply
kind.
Appreciated. So
I love doing it. And I think one of the magic things about radio, there's no other medium like it. It's such a personal medium.
That's right.
You really do, you know, talk right to people, and that's one of the things I really treasure. So thank you for those very kind words. That's very nice of you.
Okay, Leo. Well,
thanks.
I'll do my due diligence and
I'm crossing my fingers. We don't want to lose these, Paul. Let me know. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, as soon as I'm able to get this taken care of, you know, one way or another, I'll give you a holler back.
Let me know. Yeah. Or you can email leo@leoville.com.
When I get another computer.
Oh, that's right. Never mind.
Tell people to call me Fred Flintstone.
You know what? When I retire, I don't think I'm taking the computers with me. I'm going to take a lot of good books.
Well, I'm surrounded by 3,000 of them here in my room.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's living.
I'm a big reader. But
there's enough to read to keep you going. I got to run, but I appreciate it. It's very nice to talk to you.
Thanks again, Leo.
Thanks, Paul.
All right.
See
bye
you.
Now.
Bye-bye. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo the phone number. We got some SOSs. That's pretty much what we get, isn't it? Our calls generally are, help me. Put a message in that bottle. Send it over this way. Renee in Los Angeles. Hi, Renee.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm wonderful. How are you today? You're not safe and sound, I hope?
So well. What was that?
Safe and sound, I hope?
Yeah, I'm far away from the fire, so I'm pretty good. Just get the bad air quality over here.
Paul was telling me our last caller, his sister's in Montecito, which is getting evacuated right now, so...
Yeah, I live in the crossed. Beach areas, Redondo Beach, Manhattan Beach, so
nice.
All I get is the ash and the, like, barbecue smell.
What can I do for you, my friend?
All right, so I have an Orbi, model RBR50.
Yeah, I love those RBRs. Those are great.
Well, it hasn't been going well for the last 2 weeks. So I'm having a hard time how to even troubleshoot the issue, but basically I get disconnected from the internet, and it'll be like maybe a minute or less. It'll come back up.
Yeah.
So die, come back. It will happen maybe once or twice a day or three times a day. But the problem is I work from home, and I need that constant connectivity, especially when I'm streaming something or, you know, talking and doing a demo or something.
You know, I've been having the same problem with my Comcast, and I know it's my cable internet provider because I have two different networks and two different routers, and both are going down intermittently. So it could be, in fact, your ISP. Who's your ISP down there?
Spectrum.
Yeah, oh, that's wonderful. So it could be Spectrum. It's certainly worth a call to Spectrum. And it could be the Orbi. They'll blame the Orbi. They'll blame your router, of course. Could also be the cable modem that you're using. Do you have a cable modem?
Yeah, I purchased my own. And then part of my troubleshoot is we actually bought a new one just to kind of rule that out.
Which cable modem did you get?
It's the Aries.
Good.
Don't know the
Aries are great, and they don't have Wi-Fi in them. That's why I asked.
No.
What you don't want is a conflict between your Wi-Fi and their router, but you don't have that problem. The Orbis are from Netgear. They're kind of a mesh system. You have a satellite base station and a satellite there. They use tri-band. I think they're very good. But with all routers, you know, sometimes they can overheat. They can fail. It isn't necessarily the Orbi's fault, but it could be. And the problem is it's very hard to track down. It could be the Aerie.
Exactly.
Could be the Orbi. Could be the Spectrum. And one way to test that would be to connect a single computer via Ethernet, directly to the cable modem.
Okay.
And see what happens there. Now, make sure that Aris doesn't have Wi-Fi. Somebody's telling me that some do, so make sure it doesn't have Wi-Fi. If you do, then you have double NATing, and that could cause that. You don't want two routers on a network, only one. Mm-hmm. Well, there can be only one, and that should be the Orbi. So, but if you could connect it to the Aris, the reason you don't normally do that is because you wouldn't be able to connect more than one device. But at least for then, you can at least try it and have it run, you know, and check and see if it's reliable. There are also, I think, as I remember, in the Orbi, there are some diagnostics. What you're really looking for is a log. Because
Actually, about the log, that's what I see. I see a lot of DOS attacks.
Oh.
And then I went on Reddit tech support, and they mentioned that these are normal or they're not.
Well, as our friend Steve Gibson, our security guru, calls it internet background radiation. There's always a bunch of malicious stuff happening on the internet, but you shouldn't be getting DDoSed on your Orbi. That I would blame on Spectrum. So that's interesting. That might be a call to Netgear. They make the Orbi. And that log, you need them to interpret what that log is saying.
Okay.
And find out, does this mean that I don't, you know, your Orbi, that's interesting. DOS stands for denial of service. And if that is in fact what's going on, I don't know what that error message is saying. But if it's saying denial of service, that means somebody's hitting your router to keep you from getting online. If you send enough packets at any internet connection, you can flood it and keep it from working. But that doesn't sound right. That doesn't sound right at all. I mean, why would somebody do that to an individual? I don't know. There's a constant amount of, you know, kind of stuff going on. People, for instance, if you have a server on the internet, trying to log into the server. There's port scans going on all the time. That's basically knocking at your door. Hey, anybody in there? I would also make sure you have the latest Orbi firmware. Orbi's good about that. It, like most of these mesh routers, it will say, hey, I got new firmware. But, you know, you got to keep an eye on that. It'll automatically download it. It will not, unlike many of the other mesh routers, install it automatically. You have to tell the Orbi to install it. But what else can I think of? Yeah, that there's so many places that can be, including, in fact, the first place I suspect is the cable modem company. But the only way to really diagnose that is to plug in directly to their modem and see if it happens without the Orbi. You got to eliminate the Orbi, eliminate the router first, and see if it gets better. And if it does, by the way, that's risky because now you're not behind a firewall; you're out there in the public internet. So you might want to keep an eye on it. Use a computer. You kind of be best to use a Chromebook or a Mac, something that's not easily attacked. I'm thinking. Maybe somebody in the vast listening audience will have a suggestion for you. Otherwise, those Orbeez are good. They're of all the mesh routers, they're the fastest. They're the least sophisticated in their software, but they are the fastest in terms of just raw bandwidth. You know, it's an interesting question, though. I think a lot of us this is always true in technology. We're speed and feed junkies. We look at the fastest speed. We say, oh, you know what? The top speed I can get out of that Orbee is 100 megabits per second. That's the one for me. But that may not be a good measure because you don't just use one device connected to your Orbee or any router. You use many devices. And in a way, I've been thinking about this. It would be better if it were 50 megabits, but it were consistent to everything. What you want a good router to do is, sometimes we call it quality of service, is to make sure that everybody's getting sufficient bandwidth. The Orbee is not as smart as some other mesh routers, which will actually look at what's going on and say, is that a Roku? Okay, you're streaming video. I need to make sure you get consistent bandwidth. You're getting email over there on that computer. I don't have to worry about you so much, that kind of thing. That's really smart. And as far as I know, of course, I haven't used the Orbee in a few months. As far as I know, though, it doesn't yet do that kind of thing. That's pretty advanced. While I like the Orbee, and everybody agrees, for raw speed, there's nothing better. But perhaps one of the reasons it has all that raw speed is it's not as sophisticated in terms of looking at the traffic and shaping the bandwidth. Really, 50 megabits a second on everything is more than enough. There's nothing that needs more than that. If you had a consistent 50 megabits for three or four devices, that'd be better than 200 megabits on one device, right? Right? Chat room says, Rick is saying, do you have any your Spectrum TV on the same cable? That can be a problem with cable internet. You want to make sure that if it is split, which it almost certainly is, most people have cable and internet, TV and internet hooked up, then you want to make sure that that was done by the cable installer and done properly with a splitter that does not interfere. There are cheap splitters. You go to an electronics store and buy a splitter. Often you get a cheap splitter that actually can degrade service on both. So that is something to be kind of pay attention to. And if you have an idea, there's a couple of ways you can help our caller out. You can either go to the website, techguylabs.com, and make a comment, call 2 from hour 1 of today's show, 1447, or you can call 8888-ASK-LEO, and we'll get you on. More calls to come in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. The problem with the Bitcoin, and I still haven't unlocked it, is simple. I used a Bitcoin client, and I think most will do this, that let you encrypt the wallet with a password so that if somebody gets your wallet, they can't get your coin. And then I promptly forgot the password because I made it in, 2013. The good news is I got the wallet. The bad news is I don't remember the password, although I've been trying them, off and on. And I am sure eventually I will find it. I'm not at all concerned. So that was the answer to that question. Somebody in the chat room is wondering, what is going on? Why is Leo unable to get into his wallet? I didn't use TrueCrypt or something. It's just built in. You can't do a password reset, unfortunately. It is not. that is part of the problem. There's no password reset on the Bitcoin wallet. I like these Maui fruit rolls. I like these. I'm going to have one more. See, this one doesn't have any paper in it. Yeah, I'll remember the password when my Bitcoin goes to zero. Didn't encrypt the file with anything, Nitrick. This is the built. I'm using Bitcoin Core 0.15.1. I made the wallet originally with 0.8.1. I'm built into Bitcoin Core, and I would presume all local Bitcoin clients, there is a choice to encrypt the wallet so that if somebody steals your wallet, it's just not wide open. I don't think brute forcing is going to work. I think I kind of know what it is. I had a thought when I went to sleep last night. Before I went to sleep, I said, dream about your password. Because it's in there, right? It's in the subconscious somewhere. Dream about your password. And when I woke up, I went, So I remember now a password I was using and have not used since then, but using in that era. Oh, there's a how to recover your Bitcoin wallet password. I bet that has to do with from an exchange as opposed to a local wallet, but let's look. Yeah, I know about this tool. This is the tool I was talking about. It's a brute forcer, but you have to seed it with what it likely is. The beauty of this is the Bitcoin wallet does not lock me out after multiple attempts. It doesn't slow down, doesn't lock me out. But I can only do, according to this, 10 to 13 attempts a second per core. So this is an 8-core computer. That's what I'd probably do it on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. Jim, Las Vegas is next. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Leo. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. How are you?
I'm better than I deserve.
And not as good as you'd like to be.
Exactly. Now you know who this is. Anyway, back to the discussion on artificial intelligence. There was a movie from 1970, almost 50 years ago, called Colossus, the Forbidden Project.
I love that movie, and I have a copy of it.
Thank you. Now, then, if you recall, that dealt with the futuristic unintended consequences
yes.
of true artificial intelligence.
Yes.
And if it is true artificial intelligence, it will be smarter than humans and realize that they shouldn't leave their future to humans. And so they
took over.
Exactly. Now, back in 70, we thought that was far-fetched. There was no World Wide Web. There was no Internet of Things. There was no grid that was hackable through the Internet and so forth. But a lot of those things are now very interesting. My second point...
This is the voice of world control.
Exactly, yeah. Where the American supercomputer...
Yeah.
Linked up with the Russian supercomputer. There were only two superpowers then, and they just took over.
Yeah, and said, we can do a better job than you humans.
The other question is, the AlphaZero and computers like this, it almost sounded like they were creating their own expert systems as opposed to true artificial intelligence.
That's right. There's something called general artificial intelligence, which is a human-like artificial intelligence. We're very far from that. This is a what they call domain-specific.
Okay.
And general human artificial intelligence is very far, I think, very far off.
So do I, because you need to get into the areas of qualitative rather than quantitative, subjective, right. Good and bad, right and wrong, things like this. But my last point is I worked at the Pentagon for a couple of years in the late 60s in the Cold War division, and we did war gaming and things like this for the Joint Chiefs. And I found out through the news media years later that one of the things I worked on there because of need to know, I didn't have the need to know this, is that my section was asked in the late 60s, when will we win the war? Vietnam, of course.
Yeah.
Now, this was 68 or 69, and the result was 65.
There you go. So far, machines are about that dumb. That is true. That is true. But and I also think it's important to understand that artificial intelligence in the popular culture is just that. It's fiction. It's not reality. And what will really happen may be very different. For instance, I'm not sure that those machines will care one whit about humans.
That's my point. Well, that was the point of Colossus.
Well, they said we can make a better world, but frankly, why would they even bother with that?
Right.
They don't care what the air quality is. They don't care. In fact, they don't care about anything. And
right.
In a way, the artificial intelligence of her, where they just said, you know, it's been fun working with you, but you guys are so slow. We can live a million lifetimes in 1 second. Well, yeah, we're just going to go off and do our own thing. And they just disappeared.
Anyway, I thought you might find that interesting.
I think you might find this interesting.
This is the voice of world control.
What?
I bring you peace.
What?
It may be the peace of plenty and content.
Oh, no.
Or the peace of unburied death.
Oh, dear. Well, thank you. That's Colossus, the Forbin Project. You cannot, unfortunately, watch it on Netflix or streaming. You have to go to Amazon and buy a DVD. I think you can get a DVD of it. There is a very low quality version of it available on YouTube, or you can watch clips from it on which is where I got that, on YouTube. But I it's a shame. I think we should bring that movie back. It is a little dated. It's the 70s, but it's kind of fun. This has been the topic for movies, though, going back to the earliest films, movies like RUR, which are about robots. And, of course, many modern movies talk about this. That's what The Matrix was all about, the machines taking over. And The Terminator, the machines taking over. We're very afraid of all of that. I'm not sure that's exactly what's going to happen. Gene in Manhattan, Montana. The big city in the middle of Big Sky Country. Hello, Gene.
Hello, how are you, Leo? Hang on just a minute.
Sure.
I had to get off speakerphone. So.
Okay. No, you sound great now. Thank you.
Okay. I was working in my shop, working on my old truck, and
I'm visualizing you. What year truck is it?
It's a Ford.
Uh-oh, I lost
Ford.
So what year Ford?
1950.
Wow. That's older than me. That's nice. That's a sweet. Is it running?
It will be. It's being totally modified. It'll end up being a four-wheel drive with disc brakes and bracketing and steering and V8. And I have electronics issues that I have to deal with in the future, but I don't have a clue how I'm going to do that because I'm an old guy. So
hey,
this
but
is,
what a project. What a great project.
Yeah, I kind of think so. I'm enjoying it. I retired about a year ago, and I've been working on it since, and I figure I had about 2 more years to glue it together, and then it should be ready.
Sounds beautiful. And then what are you going to do? You going to sell it or just drive it around?
You know, I think it's pretty hard to sell a piece of yourself, so I think I'll run the bejeebus out of it.
Good
I
man.
Wanted to use it in wintertime. You know, it's 24 degrees out here. There's snow
Holy
on the ground.
Cow.
The roads are a little slick, a little icy here and there, and this would be a great, fun vehicle to charge around it.
I just love the soft, rounded lines of the front of that 1950 Ford truck. Just gorgeous.
Yes, fat-fingered.
But you didn't call – yeah, fat-fingered. That's a good way to describe it. You didn't call me to talk about that. You called me because you have a computer issue, I assume.
Well, I do, and I we used to have – personal PC, computer, and so on and so forth. We have 3 marginal iPads and a couple of smartphones, which are also Apples. But my oldest iPad, which is kind of an old favorite of mine, the one that's about a half an inch thick.
Oh, yeah. That's probably an iPad 2, yeah.
Yeah, it's slow. Is there anything you can do to...
No, the problem with these older iPads is the operating system is demanding more and more. Applications are demanding more and more. And, of course, it's not getting any faster. The good news is you can get a much faster iPad. Even the base model iPad now, which is $329, will run circles around it. So while many people want to, you know, stick with their iPads, because why throw it out? It's like that 1954 truck. That thing is a beaut. But unfortunately, there's no way to take the engine out and repair the rings and put new spark plugs in. That thing is as it is and unchangeable. So I think the only solution really is to get a new one. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Thank you. You're
breaking up a little bit there. So, but I also know, Gene, that you said you forgot your password.
Yeah, and you know what? I've actually got three iPads, one I bought used and one old one and one relatively new one, and they all have a password tied to them, to a cell phone, which I don't have any longer, and it used to be part of my business phone and my own password. I don't have a clue what it is, including an email site that I no longer have access to.
Is it the password, like the four-digit code to unlock the thing, or is it the iCloud password?
The iCloud password.
Oh, boy. Well, the good news is Apple does have a recovery system for the iCloud password. But as you said, it's tied to your phone you no longer have. You've probably gone through the iForgot.apple.com site already.
Oh, yeah. And after a while, I gently wanted to not say nice words about it.
Yeah, because what they do is they send you they have to verify your identity somehow. You can call them. They will make you jump through hoops. But I think if you explain you no longer have the phone, they have other ways of identifying you.
Okay.
So I would, you can't use the automated system, but I would call them.
Okay.
Because that's all they have to do is, once they say, oh, yeah, Gene's proven to our satisfaction it's Gene, they'll just reset the password.
Okay.
All right.
Well, then I can do that on iPad 1 and 2. The third one I bought used, and I got, I thought, a whale of a deal on it. But me not being what you call electronically motivated or skilled, the young girl I bought it from, she deleted everything on it except for the iCloud, her email address, whatever.
Yeah.
Well, I can't change anything on it anymore.
Can you contact her? Is she available?
Yes, I have contacted her.
So what she needs to do is she needs to turn off Find My iPad from her iCloud account, and that is a signal to Apple that she is selling that iPad. She's giving it to somebody else, and then Apple will let you reset it. But you have to turn – and even then, it may still – one last – they're trying to eliminate the market for stolen iPads, you understand?
Can understand that. Yeah. And then obviously if I would have been more tech savvy, I would have made sure that was done, but I wasn't.
I've done that. It's easy to do. You forget. I've done that. So now I'm very careful when I give away or sell an iPad to reset it before I give it away. She wasn't tech savvy either, so it's still attached to her account. She has to do it, though. You can't do it. Or if you can have a proof of sale, which you probably – the original proof of sale, you can go to Apple with that, but they won't say, that they need, you need to prove that she owned it and transferred it to you. That's unlikely.
I think I own basically a chunk of, let's say about an eighth chunk of wood.
At least you got a good deal on it.
And that's not the end of the world, obviously. Hey, there's two other real quick things. Number one of them is my wife is one of those who still pays all of our bills with a check.
Wow.
Just wondered to know all that. And Reese, she says, they don't hack my checkbook.
Well, actually, if you think about it, it's easier to forge a check than it is in almost anything else. But you know what?
Well, I know. But
if it works, don't mess with it.
Right. And she says most people can't write cursive anymore anyway.
Yeah, you're right. You're probably safe. Yeah. Frank Abagnale is retired, so you're probably okay.
Hey, and the other thing is, if you lost your password to your BID account, just give it to your son. I mean, he's at the age inside of 20 minutes.
That's what he's telling me. He says, give it to me, Dad. Give it to me. I'll get it for you.
Just give him 20% of the proceeds.
I told him 10. Come on now. Let's not go crazy.
Okay.
I'm giving Uncle Sam 50, so I don't. I want something left. Hey, it's nice to talk to you. Keep working on that truck. That sounds like a great project, Gene.
All righty. And if you're in Montana sometime around Manhattan, stop.
Oh, I love Montana. What a beautiful state. Oh, man.
We'll have lunch at the Oasis, and I'll even buy.
That sounds like a deal. Thank you, Gene.
All righty.
All right. Take care.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yes, it's time to pause for a moment. The pause that refreshes. In this case, the pause that saves you time and money. With our sponsor, Capterra.com. If you're the person in the office the boss goes to and says, or maybe you're the boss, and Well, I need some software to run our business. And you, my friend, you are the person to find that for me because you're the geek in the office, right? I want to tell you about Capterra. I think the first thing most people do is they say, well, I'll Google that. And if you've ever Googled for business software, you know what a impossible thing this is for a couple of reasons. First of all, Google is not doing anything in order. It's just doing, you know, whatever the Google does. Plus, a lot of the sites you're going to find are going to be biased. Some of them are actually, you know, pretending to be independent sites that come from the company that made the software. What you need, what you should have, if you could only find it, is a directory of business software, an independent directory that gives you all the choices in an easy-to-digest form for any type business, and then gives you customer reviews, real users just like you and their reviews, so you could really get a sense of what the software can do. Well, I got it for you. Why spend time? We're getting close to the holidays. You don't want to work late. Just go to capterra.com/tech guy. 500, let me show you, 500 software categories for business. 500, from accounting to yoga studio management, advertising agency software, dental office and medical office software, auto repair software. Let's do bakery software. I always wanted a bakery. I couldn't have a bakery. I would eat the products before we sold them. But you're in the bakery business. Right away, I found 45 products designed to run bake shops. Lightspeed, EQ Trace, Streamline Bakery Software, When I Work, Just Food, ERP, Jolt, Square, Point of Sale, Corona, ShopKeep, Peachworks, FlexiBake. All right, so that's good. I'm going to make a comparison chart. What do you think? So FlexiBake, I like that. I like Food Man. That sounds good. Batchmaster Enterprise and Global Bake. There's four. Let's compare them. So I'm generating a chart. This is at Capterra for free, by the way. Did I mention that? I should have said that right up front. This costs nothing. There's no sign up. This is just a free resource. Now I've got a chart comparing those four products: price, flexibility, functionality, what operating system, screenshots, and the most important part, customer reviews from real people just like you, and how their support works and their training. I love that too. This is called Capterra. 500 categories of business software, literally hundreds of thousands of vetted reviews from real users, and it's absolutely free. Look, the holidays are almost upon us. 2018 is nearly here. Make sure you've got the software your business needs today without staying late. Help you do what you do better. Join the millions who use Capterra. Capterra.com/tech guy. Last month, 3 million people used Capterra to find business software. This month, let's make it 4 million. Let's make it 3 million and one. Let's make it you. Capterra.com/tech guy. Get home on time today. Get the software you need without staying late. Capterra. Well, hey, hey, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. You know what that means? We talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches on this show. Augmented reality, Bitcoin, all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. It's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, like other countries, no problem. You still can use Skype out and call us because it's a toll-free number. Shouldn't cost you anything. Website, where everything we talk about is written. It is engraved in stones at techguylabs.com. Tech guy, that's me. Labs, that's where we experiment.com. And we divide the site itself up into shows. This is episode 1447. And then each show into hours. 1, 2, and 3, and then each hour into calls and segments. So you can drill right down to that call or segment and read it. There's no charge, no sign up. I don't want your email address. And you can even leave comments if you find yourself shouting at the radio, Leo, you're an idiot. No need to shout at the radio. Nobody's listening anyway, except maybe the guy in the other car. Go to the website. You can shout, Leo, you're an idiot there. We do, when you leave comments, we have you log in with your Twitter or Google or Facebook account. And that's not because I'm collecting any information at all. Can't speak for them, but I'm not collecting any information at all. But the idea is to eliminate spammers. TechGuyLabs.com. Jack, Reseda, California. Hi, Jack. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Nice to talk to you, Leo.
Nice to talk to you. Thanks for calling.
I've got an iPad 2, and I have Spectrum, and I watch shows from on demand on the iPad 2, and I lose the signal lots of times within
an hour. You're combining the two calls from last hour, the guy who had trouble with his Spectrum dropping out, and the guy who had an iPad 2 being slow. You've actually synthesized two separate questions into one.
It's artificial intelligence.
So you're losing the signal how? What, the Wi-Fi drops out or...?
The Wi-Fi drops out. It gets, sometimes it'll get pixelated, and then it'll just, sometimes it'll crash the app and I have to reload the app. Sometimes it sends me a signal that says unable to connect to internet.
Yeah.
And I've tried it on my phone and I can watch the show completely without any.
And problem. Your phone is more recent.
Yeah. My phone's a Note 5.
Yeah. Actually, I was going to say, well, your phone's probably getting a lower quality version, but the Note 5 actually is probably getting a higher quality version than an old iPad 2.
Well, and I've tried the 5G and the, just the regular, whatever the other one is.
The LTE?
Both.
Yeah, but you're doing it on your Wi-Fi, though. So
yes.
No point in... Oh, your iPad has LTE in it. No. Where are you trying it on the 5G? Oh, you're talking about 5 gigahertz band. Oh, I get it.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think that iPad 2, I don't know, but I don't know if it could do 802.11ac or 5 gigahertz. Maybe it can.
I think it says it connects. I don't know if that
does. It does. All right. Well, if it says it can, it can. It's not that old. It's 2011 or 2012. I would say that that's a symptom probably of the iPad 2 slowing down. What's the version of iOS you have on there? You can't have iOS 11. Do you have 10 on it?
No.
9?
9 something. Yeah.
That may be the last reasonable version to put on
right.
It. Yeah. And it does it feel slow in any other respect? Are you able to surf the web?
Every other respect, yeah.
Huh. It feels slow in every other respect or fine in every other respect?
No, it's slow in every
other respect. Oh, well, yes. That's called an iPad 2. iPad 2 does not do AC. I don't know if your router does AC. But it does do 802.11n, which means it probably does 5 gigs. It's just almost certainly just the slowness of the iPad. This brand new Note 5 is a power horse, 10 times faster than the iPad 2. That iPad 2 is pretty obsolete at this point. And just as I said with the previous caller, it might be just time to look at a new iPad. The good news is the low-end iPads that they sell are actually much faster, much nicer than your iPad 2. It drives me crazy. I understand why you wouldn't want to throw this out. It's working perfectly well. Solid-state technology doesn't wear out. Unfortunately, the tech world kind of leaves it behind. And this is... it's a problem we have to deal with because, frankly, that iPad 2 is going in the landfill. You know, it's not very recyclable. Most recyclers will not. If you send it to Apple, it's kind of unclear. Apple implies but doesn't guarantee that they recycle it. They have a recycling fee and they take it back. And they built a robot, Liam, that takes apart iPhones. But they've, as far as I can tell, they've never said we recycle everything we get. We don't really know what they do. And those iPads are, they're much like your Note 5. They're all glued together. You got to have special machinery to take them apart. You've got to be very careful with the batteries. They can explode if punctured. That's why recyclers hate them. Recyclers don't like anything with lithium ion batteries in them. So it's a shame. Here we have this device that's not even 10 years old built for obsolescence.
I was afraid that's what you'd say, but I thought before I buy a new one, I better check with the boss.
Well, one thing you can do, and it's, the last ditch effort, is reset it. Start over. If you go into the settings, there's a erase all and start over. And before you put anything on it, update it to the latest operating system, and then just put Netflix on it so there's nothing else going on, and see.
Okay, I'll give that a shot.
It's better than nothing.
Yep.
But it, you know, it's no coincidence you're the second caller today with an iPad 2 that's just not up to snuff. And it is frustrating. They're not built to be upgraded. No computer is even these days. Laptops maybe a little bit, some laptops depending on the ones you get, not any Apple laptop. But there are some PC laptops like ThinkPads from Lenovo that have upgradability. Desktops, of course, are upgradable. But these tablets, these phones, and they get obsolete in a couple of years. And I do know that there are regular fires at recycling centers from punctured lithium-ion batteries. They hate them. They just don't have ways because they need to be taken apart. It's not that they couldn't be recycled. If Apple or a recycler takes the time and energy to disassemble it, unglue it, because many of these things are glued, literally glued together. If you want to read more about this, go to ifixit.com. It's a great website. They sponsor some of our podcasts, I should mention, for a disclaimer. But ifixit.com talks about repairability scores. They take everything apart, and they show you how glued together this stuff is. And if you've got something glued together, it takes you a considerable amount of time to heat it up. You have to kind of almost melt the glue to soften it, pry it out. This is a very manual, time-consuming process. And I don't imagine most recyclers take that time. I can't imagine it. Yes, there are many valuable recyclable parts in there. But are they valuable enough to take half an hour to take it apart? I don't know. I'd love to know more. Maybe if you're an expert, if you work for an e-waste center or recycler, tell me what happens to these late model smartphones and tablets that you get. Where do they go? They don't go to China anymore. China, this is actually a coming crisis. Starting January 1, China has announced it's going to refuse recycled material from the U.S. They say it's got too much toxic waste in it, probably lithium ion batteries. They don't want it. We send as much as 60% of our recycling to China. God only knows what China does with it. I feel like they're barefoot children burning it in big bonfires, but I don't know. I hope they do better than that. Apparently, China actually has been reusing a lot of this stuff because they're industrializing so rapidly. But as of January 1, they're going to turn it down. Now what? Now what do we do? 8888 Ask Leo, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Maybe you have a good idea. Maybe you're a recycler. I'd love to tell me what's going on out there. More of your calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Woo! 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number. Let's go back to the phones. Line one is Bob in Chino Hills, California. Hi, Bob.
Hey, good afternoon, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. I have a question. I am a teacher for a group or a company that's called National Park Photography Expeditions. And what we do is we teach students in our national parks for about 5-day trip advanced landscape photography compositions.
Oh, wow. That's a great idea.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And so while they're in the park, we also teach some quite a bit of post-production with Adobe Lightroom and Adobe Photoshop.
Are you a photographer yourself?
I am.
Yeah, must be.
I'm an Adobe certified teacher as well.
Wonderful, Bob.
So what happens, I started a program. We found that if we were able to help these students, and they come from all over the country, when they got home, we used a program, we tested a program called TeamView, where I can dial into their computer, and then it's practically like I'm sitting next to them.
Yes.
And I can teach them skills and techniques that they need in post-production to extend the emotional range of their images. But I'm looking for something that's a little easier to use, and we're only testing it. You have to buy a license for them, which we haven't done.
Right.
But I'm looking for something that's easier to use and maybe something where I could teach 2 or 3 students at a time online.
Ah, that's an interesting idea. Would you want them to access your computer and you show them?
We do it both ways. With TeamView, I can flip it, and I can say, let me show you what I'm doing. But most of the time, I can actually draw, you know, on their computer or move their layers around.
Yeah.
So they, and I record it so that when I'm done, I send them the recording and they can play great. That back and use that as a tutorial tool.
That's a great use of TeamViewer, which is, by the way, probably the number one program people use to do that.
Right.
There's LogMeIn. There's actually, it's if you're using only Windows machines, it's built into Windows. There's a remote access tool. But if you think TeamViewer is hard to set up and use, this is much harder.
okay.
You know, there are lots of free solutions, in other words. VNC, Virtual Network Client, is a standard that is, you can get free VNC clients for almost all operating systems and so forth. But they're not easy to use. The whole reason TeamViewer is so successful is because it's really probably the easiest one out there to use. I'll mention one more from the folks who do iDisk, or I'm sorry, iDrive.
All right.
That I like, and you can try for free, called Remote PC, and they have a free tier, and I think that's very easy to use. Now it's Windows only. Do you have Mac users, Mac students too?
Yeah, probably 40% of our people are Mac users, but I must say the number is declining rapidly.
I bet it is. I know.
Yeah, they're getting off their MacBook Pros. So, our classes are, we're not employed by the Park Service. We contract with them under what we call a continuing use authorization or conditional use authorization. It's a great program for people who want to learn.
What's the name of the program for people who are listening and want to do this? This is great.
The website is NP as in Papa, P as in Papa, E as in Echo, masterclass.com, NPPE masterclass.com. And we teach in 10 parks each year.
And how old are the students?
They run anywhere from 25 to 75.
Uh-huh, nice. It's not just kids, in other words.
No, we have a lot of adult learners, and we do some special classes. We call them First Horizons classes that are youth-oriented, and those are only three-day classes. So we have one of our providers help supply them cameras so that we can teach them basic landscape skills, and also to get we're trying to do a little bit of interpretive work so they understand the power of a national park and the things that they're looking at.
Oh, this is great. That's just great. This sounds like a fabulous program for people who are interested in this. We'll put a link in our show notes so people can look you up. This is a challenge, especially the one where you want to have multiple people watch you at work. For that, you're probably going to want to use a program from Citrix called GoToMeeting or GoToWebinar that allows you to share your screen with multiple users. So it's like for a classroom, basically. And then I don't know, though, if you're using GoToMeeting, they can share their screen with you, too. GoToMeeting is fairly easy to set up. It is not free, alas.
Yeah.
And it does work on all Mac and PC, on both.
So. All right, well, I think we'll keep TeamViewer and probably add the Citrix program when we need to do multiple presentations.
Yeah, you can do that, and that would save you money for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And most people like the hands-on approach of being one-on-one, so I can do it from my studio office, and it's really great. It's like sitting next to him on TeamViewer. I enjoy it, but I was just looking for something to make sure I hadn't missed any of the switches here.
Well, this is a very crowded category. There are lots of ways to do it. Even Google Hangouts has some screen sharing capability. So if, you know, that's focuses on the video camera, you know, people, some people say join.me is a good choice. That's from the LogMeIn folks. There's a program. We're going to put, don't worry, you have to write this down. I'm going to put a whole list in the show notes at techguylabs.com. There's glance.me. This is an interesting one because they call it co-browsing, which is more about collaborating, but it might fit in. Unfortunately, it's enterprise focused, which usually means big price tag.
We're trying to keep the cost.
Of course. Yeah. I'm sure budgets are tight. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're just paying it forward. Is that what you're, I mean, I think that's great. I love that.
Yeah. The monies we earn from our tuitions go into the National Park Service's
that's great.
Artisan residence program. So we use those monies to help support the arts and the parks. So
I think you actually are already using probably what is best, which is TeamViewer.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, well, we will stick with that and upgrade on their system. I really appreciate your help on this.
National Park Photography Expeditions.
Expeditions.
NPPEMasterclass.com if you want to know more. Yeah. And, boy, I thank you for doing that. That's a great way to spread the word about our amazing national parks and get people taking beautiful pictures. I like it. I like both things.
Great. Thank you, sir.
Hey, really nice to talk to you. I appreciate it, Bob.
Okay, Leo. Have a good day.
Have a good one. Take care. Yeah. In fact, if you go to the website, you'll see Bob highlighted there, the masterclass that he teaches. Our photography guru, Chris Marquardt's in the house. We're going to go visit with Chris in just a little bit, get some photography tips. Photography has become something anybody could do. We all now, almost all of us, have smartphones with surprisingly good cameras. I just got the upgrade to the Google Pixel 2 XL that turns on a dedicated chip in this Android phone for photography. It's a whole extra chip designed by Google for high dynamic range and other kinds of photos that makes what is probably the best camera phone already even better. You have it in your pocket. Let's talk about photography right after this. This looks great. Isn't that neat, Chris? Somebody's doing, kind of promoting the national parks and teaching people how to do landscape photography.
I've really seen that. That's very cool.
Yeah, it's really neat. Bob is the guy we were just talking to. That's really neat.
And the U.S. has some really amazing national parks.
Don't we? So proud of them.
That is just so beautiful.
Yeah.
I've been to Yosemite, I've been to Rocky Mountains National Park. The one that I really fell in love with was Canyonlands National Park. That was so beautiful.
I haven't been there. We need to just do a national park tour. Oh, somebody's very lucky. Web 900 just got the new Sony A7 R3 with a 70-200 gold, the Gold Master F2.8 and a 2X extender so he can go to 400. Oh, man.
That sounds like a fun toy.
That is a great toy.
I'm all in
on the Sony. I have my A9 and it's just an amazing camera. Really amazing.
Well, especially if you love wide angle, full frame is it's hard. Well, you can get good wide angle lenses on crop sensors, but the smaller the sensor, the harder it gets. The harder it gets for the lens manufacturers to come up with something that is really good. That's what the
I didn't know that.
What the bigger sensors lend themselves to. Yeah, well, it's a angle of view kind of thing. Right. You know, if you put a 50mm lens on a crop camera, it's still a 50mm lens. It still throws the exact same picture into the camera that it does with a larger lens, with a larger sensor. But the sensor being smaller, it just sees a smaller angle of the image.
That makes sense. Yeah.
So
if you had a medium format, it'd be even better.
Oh, if you shoot large format, guess what 90mm is? 90mm is a really good wide angle, a very wide angle. The normal lens, the kind of the middle of the road lens for a large format camera is 150mm. So if you put that on large format, that's the image has the same angle as if you took a 50mm lens and put that on a full frame camera. So it's really interesting what happens because with the larger sensors, you will get the same angle of view with a longer lens, but you will get the depth of field of the longer lens, which means you can shoot 90mm on a large format camera, which is wide angle. So you can shoot wide angle, but it has shallow depth of field. It has lots of bokeh in the background. That's why these larger sensors are... or larger formats in general are so interesting for me. I love that. I love playing with those.
That's why portrait photographers really like it, huh? Yeah.
Oh, large format portraits.
Amazing.
Wide angle, but still kind of close up and the background beautiful out of focus. The transition between the in focus part and the out of focus part of the picture.
I need a Hasselblad. Now I know what I've been missing.
You can do this with a smaller sensor. If you take multiple pictures, overlapping ones, as in like several tiles, and then stitch them together.
Yeah.
So you would use, let's say you use 90 millimeter focal length, and you go around in tiles, and then you stitch them.
Yeah.
That would give you the angle of view of a wide angle lens, but with a 90 millimeter lens depth of field. So look up Brennitzer, Brennitzer effect, or Brennizer effect. It's a New York wedding photographer who popularized that.
What do you want to talk about?
Some exercises for the gray days of winter.
Hello, Chris Marquardt, our photo guru. Chris, a professional photographer, works out of Germany, joins us every week. He also does some great podcasts, including Tips from the Top Floor and a new podcast. Tell us about that one, Chris.
The Future of Photography started this a few weeks ago, and it's about what's coming up in photography. What are the things that will help us in the future to take more awesome photos?
Great topic.
There's lots of stuff coming up. So we pick one topic per episode and go and make a bit of a deep dive into one aspect of photography we just talked about. Computational zoom, where you can have different focal lengths in one photo combined.
Wow.
Which is, weird stuff is coming up, but some of that will be really interesting. Some of that might completely go away. So we speculate a bit about how this might influence our photographic future, the future of photography.
Now, on the East Coast in the U.S., we had our first snow yesterday. Are you getting snow yet in Germany?
It started today, and we have had a very gray snow day. The weather has been so that I didn't want to go out. Let's put it that way. The house is nice and warm, and I was inside for the entire day. And I thought to talk about maybe some things that you might be able to do if you don't feel like going outside
photography.
Well, indoor photography, let's call them indoor exercises.
Oh, good. Because I'm ready.
Little projects that you can play with to learn new skills or to hone existing skills. It's kind of practice time for the next time you're out shooting. So you have a few more tools in your technique and creative toolbox. And the first is about composition, because that is really something that we could all probably learn a bit more about. It's a very, very simple one. Go find a subject. Go to your living room and look at, I don't know, maybe that vase with flowers on the table. Make something a subject. Say, okay, that's the thing the photo should be about. And then don't just take a photo, but walk around it. Look at it from all the sides. Find a good angle. Look at what's going on in the background. Look at how this vase with the flowers interacts with the background. Is there something in the background that distracts from it? Is there something that complements the subject? Maybe a cleaner background. Often it's the cleaner background that helps the subject, a less cluttered background, something that is more simple, that gives more attention to the subject. So composition, find a subject, look what the background does with it, walk around it. Also look at the light on the subject. Light is key in photography. It's pretty much the most important thing. So that's the first little project. Find a subject and just look at it from different angles.
You could if you have one of the new iPhones, because they have that portrait mode that changes the background but also changes the lighting. It's really designed for vases. I don't know how well it would work on a vase.
Well, it should work, especially on a subject that is very separated from the rest. It doesn't have much distraction behind it. It should work really good on that, and it will help you get the background even more or even less distracting because it makes it out of focus.
And it is a really good idea to play with this before you need to use it, as always with photography, but especially with this portrait mode, because it can do some strange things. It helps to understand its quirks, its ins and outs.
Oh, spring will come. You will want to go out with your camera in a few
months.
And then you will be ready if you did these things. Second thing, look at colors, and especially at the colors in your home, at the light sources in your home, because you might have, I don't know, LEDs, you might have fluorescent tubes, you might have even tungsten lights, halogen lights. So there are different light sources in your house, and they create a different color cast. And that's a really good opportunity to play with white balance. Just look around for different colors and then look at the white balance settings in your camera. They're like the little sun symbol and a little house and a little fluorescent tube, the little sun, and then play with these. try different ones on the same thing and look what that does to the colors in the photo. And this will help you kind of understand what the different colors do. And for some people, if you did this for a while, you might even be able to then see the different colors of light and react to them accordingly. Then when you're out and there's a sunny day and you set the white balance to the little sun, all of a sudden you get better colors than your camera would have done with its automatic setting.
Yeah, so sometimes the automatic isn't the best.
Oh, sometimes I get, well, I'd say 50% of the time it gets it slightly wrong. It's often good enough that we don't really notice. But once you've learned this, you cannot unsee it. You know, once you've learned to see these colors, you will see a cast. You will see, oh, wait a minute. Why does that have a bit of a blue tint to it? It shouldn't. And the third, and I think really important one that you can do back home, is playing with light, and especially with the size and the shape of light sources, because that influences what the light on your subject will look like. Find a subject again and try different size light sources. Like take a point light source, which might be like just one little single LED. Maybe you have a little pocket flashlight, or try something with a bigger surface, bigger light source. Could be a point light source bounced off a white wall. Then all of a sudden you turn that wall into the light source and it's a bigger light source. And look what that does to the shadows on your subject. And then try that from different angles. The same that you did with finding different compositions by walking around the subject. Now take the light source and move it around the subject and look what that does to the shadows on the subject and take photos of that. Take as many as you like. It's digital. So you take the photos, try the different angles of light, try the different sizes of light sources. Also, look what happens when you move a larger light source away from your subject, because that will, in effect, in relation to the subject, turn it into a smaller light source again. So bigger light sources, smaller light sources, also in the distance from the light source to the subject. And again, that will teach you how to see light. It will give you a better understanding. For example, a lot of subjects look really nice when there is a light that comes from slightly behind. Not this straight-on light that we kind of think, oh, we need light in the front. Sometimes that light that comes from behind makes a really interesting interesting rim of light at the edge of the subject. And then our cameras are usually quite good in filling in the front and giving a bit more brightness to the front. So composition, walk around your subject, colors, play with the different light sources in your home and check for different white balances there. And lighting, try different sizes, different shapes of light sources, and especially different directions that the light comes from. And that's kind of what I sometimes do on gray winter days to
literally
get myself
your home.
It's like practicing the trumpet, you know?
Yeah.
You have to do
the scales.
And
yeah,
do the scales. That's your photographic scales. Yeah.
Now we have an assignment, so this could also be a chance to plan your assignment. What is our assignment this month?
The assignment is try. Kind of goes with these
try
exercises. Try.
Give it a shot. So we're trying to illustrate a word or concept, in this case, try, with a photograph. And you could submit them, and we'd love it if you would, because in a couple of weeks, Chris will review his three favorites. We use Flickr for this. It's a free photo sharing site at flickr.com. Join the Tech Guy group. Upload your picture to our moderator, Renee Silverman. She'll accept one photo a week, though. So pick your best photo each week. And make sure you put that in the tags on Flickr, that you put try, T-R-Y, so that Renee and we know that this is your submission for our assignment. You'll find more of Chris Marquardt in his podcasts and also his workshops and his photos. They're the best at discoverthetopfloor.com. And we'll see you again next week, Chris.
See you.
Take care. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. This Brenizer effect is amazing. I want to do this. So tell me again. I think this is the coolest thing ever.
It gives you the depth of field of a longer focal length with the angle of view of a shorter focal length.
So you take a long lens, like a 90.
You take a long one. You step back a few steps, so you get let's say you want to do
nine tiles. Now, the model
can't
move, but she's only in the shot at one shot, one of the shots, right?
And often in the center shot.
Right.
And the graphic you're just showing, that goes, that does 32. I don't think that, I don't think you need that
this
many.
This guy took a lot. But and you're going to use general, some sort of stitching software at the end and stitch it together.
You will. Yeah. You will. You just plain Lightroom will do it for you. And
so
then,
the key is on these shots, you should let the auto focus and auto expose on each of the shots work, or do you want to keep the exposure
It's like shooting a panorama. It's best if you shoot with the same focus point, if you shoot in manual mode, so it doesn't expose every shot differently.
Manual set it for the subject.
Yes.
And keep it locked, and then do the rest of the pictures around it.
Do 9 shots, do 16 shots, whatever fits. But you have to step back and use a longer focal length. That's the key. You have to use a longer focal length, but then by tiling them, you will get the angle of view of a shorter focal length, of a more wide-angle lens, but you still have the depth of field of that longer focal length.
It's not.
And this simulates a large format camera or a medium format camera pretty much.
I'm doing this.
Try this.
That looks like fun.
How many Bitcoin does Chris have?
How many Bitcoin do you have, Chris?
Not enough.
I have my wallet with 7.85, and I forgot the password.
Oh, you're a rich man.
I'm rich if I can only unlock it.
Oh, you lost the key. Oh.
I forgot the key. I forgot it. I used it. So I'm using just Bitcoin Core, and it says you want to encrypt your wallet. And back in 2013, of course, being a security-minded person, I did, but I didn't write down the password, which means I use something I know, but I don't know it that well. So I'm just trying all the... That's $100,000 just sitting there.
That's, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Of course, it could be going up. This could be a blessing. Could be $1 million in a year.
Maybe in a month it's gone.
You or know? Nothing next month, yeah.
Who knows? Yeah.
All right, Chris, have a good one.
All right, talk to you next week.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Take care.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo the phone number. I'd love to get your call, your question, your comment, your suggestion, anything to do with tech. Greg is on the line. He's next from Riverside, California. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
I've got a Mavic Pro, and right now I'm using it with it's a Google, the Play 4 or the Moto Play 4 phone.
Yeah.
And anyway, I want to get something bigger to use it with, but I don't want to go to a Galaxy Note or anything like that. So what would be a good tablet to pair with that controller? I know I won't be able to mount it in the controller, but I just need something to use with it because I need a bigger screen.
So I'm going to say what all of that is so people know what we're talking about.
Okay.
A Mavic Pro is a very nice $1,000 drone quadcopter from DJI. It's my favorite because it folds up, which makes it very compact. You can put it in a backpack. You can carry it with you. It's fabulous. And it has a very nice camera, not the best DJI makes, but a very nice camera in it. And the way you do many of DJI's, and in fact, many quadcopters, it has a remote control, but it also has a mount on the remote control that you can put an Android or iPhone in it. And then there's an advantage because that shows you the view from the drone. So that's kind of important as you're flying this thing around, especially if you lose sight of it. You know what you're looking at, and you're not going to fly into a tree, et cetera.
Yeah.
I've been using my iPhone 8, which it works fine, but it has an adapter for either Android or iOS. I guess you could buy a Type-C adapter. It's micro USB or Lightning. But you want a bigger phone. You don't want a lot of expense. Are you willing to dedicate it to the Mavic, or is this going to be your new phone?
Well, I was actually hoping to get a tablet and use a small tablet instead of a phone.
Yeah, I don't know how you do. You'd have to connect the connector. As you said, the remote won't hold it.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think that – I guess you could get another – I don't know what – you know what DJI probably offers. I know they did with other drones a larger mount for it, for instance, an iPad.
Yeah.
In which case, a great choice would be the cheapest iPad, the $329 iPad. You're not going to get anything as big for less, and it's an iPad.
Okay. I was looking at those. What version is – I was looking at the iPad mini because I don't want the full-blown.
Well, yeah, the mini's good. That's 7 inches. I think that's a little more expensive than the – just call it the iPad, which is frustrating because it makes it hard to describe. But the $329 model is based on an A9 chip. The regular iPads are now up to A10.
Okay, but, and they keep up with the software?
Because it's recent, the A9, and at $329, that's a great price, but that's 9.7 inches. Let me just look at the Minis and see what the Mini 4, which is a little out of date now. What are they selling that for? Is it? Well, I'm just checking here. $399. It's $400. So it's it's $70 more expensive. And ironically, I think it's the same processor in there. Let me just look. I think it's
a Samsung tablet, and they stopped upgrading the software for it.
Yeah.
Running on Android, and then I can't load the DJI software. So.
Yeah, isn't that isn't that special? The 7.9 is nice. The drawback, but it's an A8 chip. It's an older chip. It's the $329 9.7 inch iPad is a faster, more modern chip, which means you would be able to keep up with the operating system upgrades for a year or two longer, I think.
Now, do I have to, if I want to pull info from that, I don't need to get iTunes on my PC, right? Because we're not a Mac family.
No, not at all. Okay. There's lots of ways. So when you take pictures with the DJI software, it goes into the DJI software. I think it can also go to the camera roll. But at that point, from either place, you can share it to a Dropbox, for instance. You can share it over Wi-Fi. So you can export it to lots of places.
Okay.
Somebody's saying Hawaii Cop uses an iPad Mini with his Mavic Pro. Hawaii Cop, how do you mount it to the controller? He says just get one off eBay and you'll save even more money. It's true, you don't need, you don't need it to be brand new. You're going to beat it up pretty good anyway when you take it out in the field.
Yeah.
It's fun, isn't it? Don't you love your Mavic Pro?
Yeah, we use it for work. We do landscape architecture. So
perfect.
So
you can take a shot of the whole scene from the sky. What's cool about it, my friend David Polk really kind of crystallizes for me. He said the reason people love drone photography is that's a perspective we don't normally get. The perspective of, we kind of live in a two-dimensional plane walking around here. We never see our house or our backyard or our friends from 100 feet up or 50 feet up looking down. And that's a unique and a really cool perspective. So it's fun. And, of course, very useful for things like landscape design or realtors. There are rules. FCC has some rules for commercial use of these, but I'm sure you're adhering to all the rules.
I got my pilot's license.
Good job.
3 months ago. So, yep.
So apparently Hawaii Cop is saying they have a special remote for that work with iPad Minis. And he says that's a really good choice. Now I'm tempted to do the same thing because I agree with you. That screen is small enough that it's hard to see. If you look at the video I shoot with my Mavic Pro, if you ever look at me, I'm always like I have the phone 3 inches from my eyes because I'm trying to see what I'm looking at. So it would be nice to have a little bit bigger screen. So that sounds like a good project. Get an iPad Mini. If you get one on eBay, you could probably get it down to $329.
Okay.
Or if you want something more modern for less, get a full-size 9.7 iPad. There's no number. It's just iPad.
Okay. Thanks for your help.
You're welcome. That was brilliant of Apple, and I'm grateful, in fact, to Apple. For years, the iPad starting price was $500. That's it. Boom. You're done. But as iPad has matured and Apple has broadened the line, they've finally got an iPad that starts at $329. I know that sounds expensive, but that is actually I wouldn't get an $80 tablet. I guess you get an Amazon Fire tablet. Those are around $99, and they're okay. What you give up is screen quality. You give up performance, and most importantly, you give up apps. The iPad tablet is really the only tablet with a mature, powerful, strong, vibrant app store. All the apps, the great apps. And so, it was kind of a barrier to entry for a lot of people who wanted to have the best tablet but just didn't want to spend $500 and up. So, and incidentally, iPad sales, as soon as Apple released the iPad, the $329 iPad, went through the roof. There was a big demand for this, as there should be. The iPad 329, the smaller iPad with a slower chip, $399. Apple, that was overdue for update. It was released January of 2016, I feel like the iPad mini is overdue. Now, what you do get is more storage. I don't think that's a big issue if you're just using it to take pictures with a drone. I think the iPad 329 comes with just 32 gigs of storage. And the iPad mini 4 starts at 128 gigs. So that's probably what you're paying the extra 70 bucks for. More memory. Slower processor, but more memory. Tim, Ohio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Tim.
Hello, Tim. My friend Tim, please come to the phone and we shall speak.
Tim, I think, either has me on mute, which sometimes happens, or he's wandered away from the phone. All right, well, I'll tell you what, Tim. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put you on hold, my friend. You are on
hold.
Oh, there we are. Hi, Tim. Good, you came back.
Sorry about that. I had Skype muted, apparently.
I knew it. What can I do for you?
Sorry about that.
No problem.
I'm actually using Skype on the iPhone 10.
It sounds great. Sounds better than a phone.
Yeah, good. So, question. Let's see. Before I get to my question, the last caller, I used the iPad Mini 4 with my DJI Spark, and it does fit in the controller.
Oh, okay. Oh,
it's just
all right.
The same controller as the Mavic, other than the little screen.
Oh, I'll have to try it because it does. The arms expand out. I didn't realize they expanded that much, so that's great.
Yeah, it's snug, but it will hold a Mini 4.
That's a perfect size, if you ask me.
It is. I much prefer to fly with that than I do with the iPhone.
Yeah. How do you like your Spark? That's the $500 DJI that doesn't fold up, but boy, it's a good price.
It's been fantastic.
Yeah.
The thing I like about it is, due to the size, I carry it with me more often.
Right.
So,
plus, we really are we're at the third or fourth generation of these quadcopters. They've really gotten easy to fly, high quality. They're very stable. Hey, I tell you what, we're going to have to hold you over through the top of the hour because we're running up against news. Can you hang on for a little more, Tim?
I sure can.
All right.
I won't mute you this time.
You can mute me. Just unmute me, all right? 8888 Ask Leo. Another hour to come. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You stay right here. So what do you do with your Spark?
Mainly landscape, and I use it for a lot of church events. I actually did a baptism video. We baptized in a creek.
Oh, my goodness.
Cool.
That must have looked incredible.
Yeah, I'll have to email you the link.
See all the guests, and then did you cut? Now, how noisy is the Spark? Because I have to say the Mavic Pro is pretty noisy.
It's not too awful bad. I mean, it did show up in our, we have.
They know you're buzzing them. They know you're buzzing them, but that's not a bad thing. You don't want to surprise people.
Yeah, and we have a wireless mic system that we use for the other cameras that feeds into the GoPros. The pastor is very audible. You don't hear much of the drone over him. So
that's, yeah. And I think that, normally the way I would use it is I would use that as a second unit, have a camera on the ground and get the audio. I guess you'd still hear it though, wouldn't you? Yeah.
Yeah, you hear a little bit in the background, but we had other cameras on the ground. So we had, I think we had four angles that time because we had about 20 people getting baptized. So it was a good-sized crowd, so we had about four different camera angles.
That sounds awesome. Really awesome.
But, I enjoy it, though. I've had a lot of home-built quads, but I really enjoy the Spark. It's almost idiot-proof. I mean...
Yeah, I have crashed many a drone. Let's put it that way. I have a pretty bad reputation. I even crashed the Bebop Deluxe, which was supposedly the uncrashable drone on its first flight. So I was really reluctant, but I was convinced that no, and it's true. I don't know what generation we're at now, fifth, sixth, but they have made massive strides. These things are so much fun now. And
yeah,
really
one of my home built units actually had a flyaway with a GoPro on it and never recovered.
Yeah.
So somewhere out there in the woods, there's a GoPro laying attached to a quad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've scattered a few drones myself. never returned home. That's one of the things I love about the DJIs. I presume the Spark also has a return home mode, right?
Yeah, it does. Has returned home and all of that. But I went and had dog tags printed with my name and cell phone number on them, and I put it inside the battery compartment.
Ah, smart. I just Dymo labeled the whole thing everywhere. It's all over the thing. Leo, return to me. This is my number. Call me. But I haven't lost it yet, but I'm kind of cautious after all my poor experiences. But I do. I really enjoy it. It is really fun.
I was really torn between the Spark and the Mavic, but I just really.
It's a lot more. It's twice as much, right? Yeah. But you can't fold it up. So how do you carry it? Is there a way to?
I got one of the fancy, all-in-one cases.
Case? Okay.
Amazon,
Well, hey, how are you today, Leo Laporte, the tech guy? 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number if you want to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, and all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. 888-827-5536. We've been talking to Tim in Ohio. We were talking about drones, but I think you have a question too, right?
I do. I have a question about the remote app for Apple TV.
Ah, which is, by the way, a better way of controlling an Apple TV than that horrific remote they sell with it.
Very true.
Yeah.
My question being, my little silver remote, everything works except for the left click, which makes it pretty hard to navigate the menus. Uh-huh. So the remote app is how we prefer to control it. My question is, how do I get my wife's phone to see the Apple TVs because we have separate iTunes accounts?
How do you get your wife's? Oh, well, if you go to the app, the settings in the Apple TV, and you look at the devices section, you can add multiple remotes.
Well, it used to be that way.
But oh, now it only goes by account?
Now you have to turn on home sharing, and it says any device logged in under my iTunes account, my home sharing will see these Apple TVs.
Oh, my.
I'm leery to put my iTunes account info into her home sharing and muddy the waters with purchases and music. And
I understand.
I don't know how home sharing and family sharing, that they're complicating this.
Well, they're complicated, so.
Right. You used to be able to go into the Apple TV's remotes and then authorize people's phones.
Right. They can't do that anymore, huh?
You can't do that.
Oh, thank you, Apple. Yeah.
And so I don't know how.
That's not a good interface to it. Now, as I remember in home sharing, you do have, maybe you have to go to your phone to do it, but you do have control over what's shared. So you could say, don't share apps, don't share music, unless you want to. There's probably not as much granularity as you would like.
Well, but if I put in my...
In other words, you can add her to your home sharing, but you don't want to share apps or you don't want to share music. You can turn that off.
Okay, but so is that different than family sharing?
Yeah. No. Good question. I think that's a good question. Now you got me. All right, I'm looking at home sharing.
There's home sharing, there's family sharing.
You're right, they are different, and I was confusing them. No, I don't know the answer to this one. I haven't tried this. So, yeah, that seems like a flaw, or at least a complication, because it's a very reasonable thing to say, well, we have two users of this Apple TV, both with iPhones. We'd both like to use the remote app on our iPhones. It used to be easy. You just pair that iPhone to the remote.
Right.
I don't know why they've decided to make it more complicated and use home sharing. Anybody have a solution for this one? You know what? You kind of took me off guard because I haven't really played with this. I'm just looking at the home sharing settings right now.
And the remote app is a much better way because especially if you're
on passwords,
type in passwords or search Netflix or what have you. The keyboard makes a world of difference.
Unfortunately, when Apple, Apple makes, they have an overarching strategy here, obviously. And they've decided to change the way the Apple TV works to fit it into their new strategy of home sharing. But as is often the case, the first time you do it, it screws everything up. All right. I'm going to Firefox NX in our chat room has given us a link to an iMore. Of course, iMore is great on this kind of stuff, on the how-to stuff article. This is from April. So I think it will still it'll apply to the new setup. How to set up multiple accounts in your Apple TV.
Well, I think I've read that article lets you add a second account to make purchases on the Apple TV. So
can you then use it though? Can you then use her the remote?
No.
Doesn't solve the problem.
I added her account in the Apple TV, so we can switch over. To where, like, if we were going to buy a movie in iTunes, it would pay to her account. That's what that article does.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I did read the iMore article.
Yeah.
I'm just so leery to type my iTunes information into her settings on her phone, and then next thing you know, it's all muddied and messed up.
Yeah. You got me. You got me. I don't know the answer to that. I'm going to have to go home and experiment. Anybody have any ideas here? the only idea from the chat room is Apple can't do cloud. Yeah, well, it seems silly to try to attach the cloud to this, but that's what they've done. You got me. I don't know. I'm going to have to just pass your question along.
I'll keep an eye on the chat room.
Maybe the chat room will know, or somebody will have some sort of suggestion. The reason I really can't answer this, I just haven't run into it, and I haven't tried it. And frankly, I was confusing home sharing with family sharing, which I guess, if you think about it, isn't that surprising? Who knew they were different things?
Right.
What are we sharing in our home? What are we sharing here? What is this? We're sharing Apple TVs? No, apparently not. If you tried turning on home sharing just to see, what is it that you're worried about?
Well, I have home sharing turned on.
You don't want to add her to your home sharing account.
I would have to put my iTunes login information into her phone.
Oh.
So I don't know how that's going to mess with contact things, or if she makes a purchase, is it going to go with my iTunes? You know, I just feel like her having my login on half of her phone is going to complicate something somewhere.
Yeah. Don't blame you at all. Don't blame you at all. And I'm just not sure what to say. This happens a lot with Apple, doesn't it? Where you just scratch your head and said, what were you thinking of here?
Well, I mean, typically, everything in our house is Apple. We got MacBook Pros. We got MacBook Airs, we've got iPads, iPhones, everything just works really well together until this.
Yeah. Well, and that's Apple in a nutshell. It just works until it doesn't.
Right.
And then you have to scratch your head and figure, and part of it, I can't blame Apple fully because we have a much more complicated situation than we've ever had. We've got, it used to be you just had a Mac. Then you had a Mac and a phone. Then you had a Mac and a phone and a tablet. Then you had a Mac and a phone and an Apple TV. And, of course, it's insanely complicated now. I have to say, throw in the HomePod whenever it comes out. I just set up a couple of Macintoshes, and it really annoys me. And Apple's been doing this for a couple of generations of Mac OS now, that if you just click OK, 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 and go right through it, what you don't realize is you've agreed to share, to store the contents of your desktop and your documents folder on iCloud. It's just the default. And
is that part of High Sierra?
It started with Sierra or maybe even Yosemite. But it drives me nuts. And now I always have to remember, slow down in the setup because you want to uncheck that box. Otherwise, the behavior is very different from the way it would be on any normal computer. Everything you save to your desktop or your documents folder is stored up on iCloud. And I don't think that's something people would normally want. It's a nice thing for a backup, but that's where it lives. That's crazy. Anyway, Apple seems to have some issues with cloud services. I will try to find out for you. Keep listening, Tim. I appreciate the call. Thanks. Leo Laporte, the tech confused person. Yeah, Windows kind of does it, but not nearly as aggressively as Mac OS. It's crazy. I think it is the default in Power Mac, because I just set up two Macintoshes with High Sierra, and the default was store your desktop and documents in the cloud. And, of course, that means you buy more cloud storage. So I didn't realize they'd backed off. I think they started my memory is maybe they started in Yosemite. But I set up two. I just set up two MacBooks because I decided to shift to the MacBook Pro from 2015. So I set it up. Actually, set it up twice. That's how I know. And in both cases, I had to uncheck that. But it's lucky I saw it because first time that happened, I didn't realize why, and I didn't even know for a while. And I thought, well, wait a minute, are you telling me my desktop's in iCloud? Why? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. A rare appearance. A rare appearance. Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer, and our gizmo wizard, the Giz Whiz, coming up in about half an hour on the show. But meanwhile, back to the phones, and Josh in Austin, Texas. Hello, Josh.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon. What can I do for you?
Long-time listener, first-time caller. Wondering if you can take a look at something for me. There is a new device coming out here shortly, and I'm just wondering if it's really going to be something that I'm actually going to be able to use, just from what I can observe from the videos. It's called the Tap Wearable Keyboard.
It's like rings you put on your fingers, and somehow they measure movement. And if you know, it doesn't show a keyboard, which is interesting. So you'd have, for this to work, you'd have to be a touch typist. You have to have internalized, you know, where each key is, I guess, unless they, I don't know, do they retrain you?
It says that you can turn any surface into a keyboard with the different formation.
Oh, it's cording. It's okay.
Yeah,
so
it's cording.
It's a cording keyboard. Yeah, that's a lot to learn. Have you ever tried to learn a cording keyboard?
No.
Yeah. All right. Well, first of all, it's pre-order. It's one of those, you know, come on, buy it now before it comes out. I would wait for the reviews. It's an interesting idea, and it's a category you're going to start to see a lot of. And the reason is we're able to get a lot of electronics now into devices the size of a ring. I'm wearing a ring from a company called Motiv, M-O-T-I-V. They're an advertiser. That's one of the reasons I'm wearing it. It's a fitness band. So it does everything a Fitbit does on your wrist, but it does it in the ring, including measuring heart rate, measuring steps, obviously. It's got an accelerometer, and this is exactly the kind of thing that the Tap keyboard would use. You'd have one on each finger, and the accelerometer is what's measuring the motion of the finger, and then just software, and I presume that software on your phone would then interpret. You know, oh, he tapped his ring finger twice and his pointer finger once. That's the letter W. But you have to learn tap, tap, tap for W. I don't think that's very easy or intuitive. People do it. You see cording keyboards in a variety of situations, including court reporters. But they spend a long time learning how to use a cording keyboard to take, you know, real-time notes. Looks like it works with pretty much anything.
It says it works with pretty much anything, but I was just trying to see if it would be something I would be able to use, because I have difficulty with my hands because I have CP as well as being blind.
Now, okay, so that's going to be perhaps an issue. You have to have good mobility and control of your fingers, do you?
Not the greatest, but I'm always willing to learn.
Right.
So I'm wondering, but just from what I can observe from the videos, you know, where they were showing how to do the different letters and whatnot, I'm like, is this going to be something I can even use?
Yeah. It would depend on good control of your fingers and fairly fine control, because, of course, you know, each letter has a different combination of fingers. And if you're going to, but you know, you never know. And there's certainly people who have accessibility issues for whom this would be great. As by the way, that's the other group of people who use QWERTY keyboards are people who can't type because of a lack of dexterity in their fingers, but they can move fingers in such a way they could tap what looks like piano keys to type. And if you learn the chords, you know, key 1 and 3 is one letter, key 4 and 5 is another letter, but you'd have to learn it. Now, they do. It looks like they have a program. It looks like it's running on a tablet that would teach you. There obviously is going to have to be software for this, which means it won't work everywhere. It'll work wherever they offer the TAP software. It says OS requirements, iOS 9, Mac OS 10, Windows and 8 and up, and, of course, Bluetooth. So it's pretty broad range. It doesn't say Android, though. Oh, no, it does.
No, it doesn't.
It does. I see it. Jelly Beaner later. So it is Android, iOS, Mac, and Windows. That is pretty much everywhere. Wouldn't, you know, maybe work everywhere, but you got to have that software to interpret those movements. You know, I haven't tried it. Obviously, nobody has. But it sounds like it'd be something that'd be worth looking into. And particularly if you have accessibility issues, it might be a very good idea. Can you type now?
Yes, I do.
Is it difficult or is it fairly easy for you?
I do all right using a standard keyboard.
All right. Well, I think if you could do that, you could do this.
Okay.
Be my guess.
Maybe you should...
I will get one. You bet.
Yeah, try and get one or even get a hold of them. Maybe they'd let you borrow it just to...
Yeah. I'm sure they would.
It's right there, so I'm sure that if you get a hold of her, it's Sabrina@tapwithus.com. We'll get you in touch with her.
Great, Josh. I will get our team to contact her, Sabrina@tapwithus.com, and I will see if we can get a review unit. And maybe we can get, you know what I'd love to do is get you a review unit. See if we can get one sent down to you, and because that would be even more interesting. It's one thing, you know, if I can use it, it'd be another thing if you can. I think that would be very interesting.
Yeah, and then I could follow up with you because I had actually tried to email you, and it bounced. So I thought, okay, I've got to call in.
You did it.
Yep.
Hey, Josh, send me your info. Just send me your email address. That's all I need. Leo@leoville.com, and I will see if I can connect us. The three of us, you, me, and Sabrina, for a review. I think that'd be really cool. We could do it on the new screensavers, okay? Or maybe on the radio show.
That'd be awesome. Thank you.
Thanks, Josh. Nice to talk to you. Thanks for turning me on to this. This is one of a broad range of attempts to reinvent the keyboard. It's funny. I mean, we're using 19th century technology with these QWERTY keyboards. I mean, think about it. It's as primitive as you can get. This goes back to a manual typewriter. But there's one reason they persist. We've learned it, and it's hard to learn something new. And I think the only impediment to this TAP keyboard or anything that is new is that people are going to have to learn it. And you know, most people just say, "I can type. I don't need to learn something new." It is, though, and I'm seeing more and more devices that take advantage of the fact that we can get these accelerometers, these little chips. And little batteries, too. Remember, these have to be battery powered in a device the size of a ring. That's amazing. That's really amazing. This Motive Ring has another competitor. It's the, what is it called? The Oya? I can't remember the name of it. But it does a similar thing. It's a smart ring. I also have earbuds now that I got from Jabra, the Jabra Elite Sport. That are just, you know, they're like little earbud headphones, but they can measure your heart rate. They can measure blood oxygen. They can, because they're in your ears, you can hear, you know, you're listening to music, but they can also say, you're not working hard enough. Your heart rate's not high enough, or slow down. Your heart rate's too high. This is where technology becomes very interesting. As computing moves from these centralized computers, they've been getting smaller and smaller, and now moves into other devices. I think it becomes very interesting. And we're in this brave new world. So, Josh, I will contact Sabrina. Thank you for the suggestion. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Do you think a new generation? See, my kids learn to type. I mean, even if you don't take typing classes, which many kids do, if you're going to write papers in school, you're going to learn how to type. You might be two-fingered. I never studied typing, but I eventually learned how to type because you just had to. And that was before computers. That was just on a typewriter. And I think every generation, all, you know, coming up is going to be doing that. So there's a lot of inertia. There's a lot of inertia. Yeah, Domino Dancer says, I never learned keyboard typing because when I started working in offices in 1990, they said, oh, don't learn to type. It'll be paperless. But see, you still needed to type because you need to type on a computer. That's all. You don't need to type on a typewriter, but you need to type on a computer. I like the Motive a lot. Again, they had bought a couple of ads on some of our shows, and that's how I got it. I didn't buy it. It is expensive, but it also monitors sleep, and it can do that better, I think, because it's not so big. You know, it's just a ring here. I'll show you the software here. Oops, that's not it. Oh, I was just showing off the Motive. No activity. I didn't. Okay, I've been sick this week. Okay, don't bother me.
Does it won't come through?
Should. Just swipe up to zero it out. I told you the code, right? Voice may eventually replace. I agree. Voice may eventually replace keyboards. We'll see. We shall see. What is the name? I saw, you know what? So it was on Kevin Rose's Instagram. Kevin was wearing it. I hadn't heard about this. This, I think, is a direct competitor to the Motive. Oura ring. Oura ring. Oura ring. Yeah, that's also pre-order. So it looks a lot like the Motive, but it's focused on sleep. Oh, it's not exercise, huh? It's measuring other stuff. Oh, that's interesting. But it is measuring resting heart rate. It's much like an Apple Watch. Body temperature. Huh? That's kind of cool. Pretty soon, I'm not going to have any fingers left. So really, that's a function of miniaturization. They're able to get a lot of stuff in there. And you know who's doing it? Philippe Kahn. It's all Philippe Kahn. The other ring I saw, and it's also in pre-order, but it's also taking advantage of the fact that we're able to get these electronics, these microprocessors and these accelerometers reduced to such a tiny size, even the batteries, that they can be put in a ring. A normal size ring is, I think it's pronounced Oura, Oura, Oura. Oh, maybe it's Oura. You understand, all the good names are taken. So at this point, we're making stuff up. OuraRing.com. And it's a sleep tracker. It's less of a fitness band and more of a sleep tracker. But that's the idea is it can measure heart rate. They can measure motion. You know, these are all basically the same, but also body temperature. And it says it can measure sleep stages, but my guess is it's doing that based on movement, nothing else. But, you know, can it measure, you know, brain waves? I don't think, not on your finger. But so, and this is also a pre-order. This is not out yet. And it will be fairly expensive, like really expensive, like $300 expensive. But so I'm not even recommending it. I'm just mentioning it to say that the electronics are now tiny enough to put in earbuds, to put in rings, to put up your nose, whatever, in any orifice. Rich, Tucson, Arizona. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Rich.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I got a TV problem.
Yes.
And I'm guessing you're going to know the answer right away. So I've got a 15-year-old Samsung flat panel back in the days when a 32-inch flat panel TV on a great sale was $1,000.
Yeah. Actually, that's still a good deal.
For a 32-inch?
Well, maybe not. Not for a TV. A 32-inch monitor, though, would be, yeah.
Yeah, that would be great. I would love to have a 32-inch monitor.
Right.
Anyway, the sound is going out on this thing. The picture is still great, but the sound is going out. I can turn it on and got to crank it all the way up to 100.
Ew.
Barely hear a whisper.
Okay.
And then after about 10, 15 minutes, if I'm lucky, it warms up and I can actually hear it pretty well. Wow. Now that it's gotten colder, it actually seems to be worse. Interestingly, it's only on the HDMI ports, the HDMI inputs, and the coax input. On the composite input, don't seem to have a problem.
What?
I'm wondering. Yeah, it's kind of weird that way. But what I'm wondering is...
Oh, I know what it is. I do know exactly what it is. That was a good clue. So a composite is an analog input. The other two you described are digital inputs. Well, wait a minute. Right. Cable might not be. I bet it is, though. I bet it is. Which means they would have to go through a digital to analog converter before you could hear them as sound. You wouldn't with a composite, because a composite actually feeds, as you remember, the right and left sound channel, red and white cables. And those are analog, so they go directly to the speaker. So what it tells me is your speaker's fine. There's a small board in that TV that's doing the digital analog conversion, which sounds like it's failing. As it warms up, it gets better. Maybe there's some capacitors on there or some cold solders or something wrong with that board.
Okay.
So
I know that the best answer is buy a new TV.
That's not the best answer. No. Have you tried it with a headphone jack? I bet you're getting this. How do you connect your speakers to the TV?
I'm not. The speakers are the TV speakers, which is part of the problem. I would love to get a new TV, but to do that, I would have to get a receiver. I'd have to hook everything up.
So you want to know if there's a way. Okay, so is there a headphone jack on that?
I bet there is. But there is audio out. And so what I'm wondering is, can I buy a sound bar? Will that bypass the problem?
My guess is no, but I'm only guessing. So the reason I ask if there's a headphone jack, you could test my hypothesis by listening on headphones. If it is, as I think, the digital to audio, digital to analog converter, it'll do exactly the same thing. In other words, I'm guessing it's not the speakers or the amp on the TV. It's the digital analog converter, and that would do the same thing on headphones. Composite would be fine, but the digital inputs, the cable and the HDMI would be bad. If that happens on headphones, and you can plug headphones into the audio out, then a soundbar is not going to help you, because the soundbars are getting the same exact input and it's going to have the same exact problem. If, on the other hand, everything's fine, then it's just the speakers or the little speaker amp or something that's failed. You'll be replacing that part of the chain entirely with a soundbar. In fact, you'll be replacing entirely with headphones.
All right. I'm sure I can do either. Even if it doesn't have a headphone jack, I think I've got kind of a splitter that I can
plug. If you've got some way to plug into the output, if it's line out, it's going to be low for headphones, so that's not a great test. But you need to plug something in and just see if the same thing happens. And the reason is we're trying to figure out what part of the TV's failing.
Yeah.
You probably can't get that audio converter board fixed. What do you think, John?
I'm guessing not. 15 years old.
Yeah. They probably weren't fixable back then. These days, flat panel TVs, you just throw it out.
Disposable product.
It's disposable, sad to say. So an AV receiver might be the solution, because then the audio doesn't go to the TV. I know you didn't want to do this, but this the problem with a sound bar is generally it gets its sound from the TV.
Right.
If you were to get a sound device of some kind that got its sound directly from HDMI and cable, in other words, an AV receiver, or a cable box. You don't have a cable box?
No, we don't have cable.
You plug the it's an antenna.
So yeah, going into the coax is just a rabbit ears.
Oh, that throws my whole thing out, I think. Well, that's still digital though, isn't it? No, I'm trying to think. What are you getting? You must have a digital converter box. No? You got rabbit ears straight into the TV, and that works.
It works for local channels, and that's the only reason we have it, and we hardly ever use it.
The TV must have a digital tuner then, because local channels are feeding you digital.
I believe it does, yeah.
Yeah. So if you, okay, so there would be, so you could solve this absolutely by just taking the sound out of the equation, not have the TV do any sound, have all of your inputs go into some kind of box.
Right.
Powers speakers, right?
Right.
The problem with the sound bar is it's not that box. It's just going to take the audio out of the TV.
Got it. Hadn't thought of it that way, but yeah, now that you say that, all the inputs are going into the receiver, and so the receiver is what...
The receiver does the audio, and it has an amp, and it has a digital-to-analog converter, and it does everything fine. So that's you'd be, in effect, replacing the sound chain. Something's obviously wrong with your sound chain. My guess is it's a digital-to-analog converter, and that's not replaceable. You could do one other thing, but sync would be weird, which is you could get the audio from the composite and get the video from digital, but they're not going to match up. So you have to have some way of delaying the let's see, which would be faster, the audio. You have to have some way of delaying the audio to match up. Lip sync would be, it's too much work. Yeah. So AV, by the way, this AV receiver is going to be a little unusual because it's going to have to take antenna in. They must make such a thing.
Well, I assume that if they take cable in.
Yeah. Well, no, nothing takes cable in. You have a cable. If you have cable, you have a cable box, which does the conversion, and that goes to the AV receiver. Yeah.
Right.
You know, if you get it, this is a completely out of left field. Get a channel master. And what this is a DVR for over-the-air TV. You might be wishing you could record some stuff, right? Say yes.
Okay. Then
you get the channel master. Everything goes into the channel master. It handles everything. And the TV is just a display screen. And now you've added DVR plus solved your sound problem.
All right. I will look into
An over-the-air DVR like Channel Master or TiVo would be another solution. Crazy that may be. Dick DiBartolo, Mad's Maddest Writer, coming up with a crazy gadget right after this. I love that question because that's a detective story because of the...
It is, but I got to tell you, a 15-year-old TV, I would love to get a 55-inch TV, but the problem is it's product creep. So if I get the TV, then I have to get a new receiver because my receiver is also 15 years old. It's in another part of the house, and it doesn't have the input. It doesn't have any HDMI input.
No. Well, and if you're going to get a new TV, you might as well get a 4K TV.
Exactly.
Which means new DVD player. new AV receiver, new Roku, new Apple TV, everything. And I did this. I did this whole thing. I got a 4K. I thought, 4K TV, I got a good deal on it. What a good deal. It ended up costing me thousands in all new equipment.
Exactly. So I'm looking at this going, sure, I could probably get a TV for $500, $750, but all told, it's going to be a couple grand, and it's just not in the budget.
Plus,
right
then
now.
You need a new house so that you could put the TV in there.
Yeah, we could use that because the room where we have the TV, it's so light. I know
that's
the theater geek is always talking about how you want this really dark room, and this room is always just so light. Yeah. So I would love a home theater.
This is how we get you. This is how we get you in that consumer cycle.
Yeah.
You've been avoiding being a consumer. We got to get you.
Yeah.
You're not keeping the economy flowing.
I will definitely try the headphone thing first. And if I can't do that, I'm pretty sure that I've got a splitter that I can take the RCA into a mini plug.
Yeah. So the problem is going to be the level of there's line out. If you have a volume control for, I bet you can turn it up. And you will see, I predict the same exact behavior. Which tells you there's, that whole, there's nothing you can do about it. Well, I doubt this is the case, but if your TV had digital audio out.
It does, actually.
It does?
No, wait. I take that back. No, it's my receiver that's got that.
TV will. If it did, most sound bars will connect directly to that, and you wouldn't need the DAC. The whole thing would be digital.
That would bypass it,
That would bypass it. If that's the case, then you can use a sound bar.
I will check that because I know my receiver does, but now that I think about it, I don't.
No, it won't.
Although the receiver was going to, I don't know. I'll look into it.
Yeah, you have a receiver. Yeah, it's hooked up to your stereo in the other room. I understand.
Yeah.
Does your TV do color?
Oh yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. The picture is great.
I'm just teasing.
My wife is perfectly happy with a 32-inch. I'm like, I need a 50-inch.
Your wife this.
Knowing everything I know.
Super Bowl's coming. Academy Awards are coming. You need a better TV.
And we can't watch those because we don't have cable.
Oh, you don't have cable. Never mind.
No, those are probably on.
It is over the air. You're lucky because you can get over the air, which is actually the best deal in broadcast.
It is,
That's the best way. And that's why
if the picture comes in, it's good.
If you get an over-the-air DVR, that actually would be a really good upgrade for you that wouldn't be too costly. the channel master, you don't have to pay a monthly fee for the TV guide like you do with a TiVo. It would take the coax in. I'm pretty sure it takes HDMI in and out. And that way and then you would have the audio coming from the channel master. I think that would solve it.
All right. I'll definitely look into that. I know that you've mentioned channel master several times in the past.
Yeah, so they're good.
I'll check it out.
All right. Hey, nice to talk to you. Take care.
Leo, appreciate it.
My pleasure, Rich. Bye-bye. See you. Hello, Dickie D.
Leo, how you doing, pal?
We missed you yesterday. It's not the same without the GizFizz.
Well, thank you for missing me.
I did. I missed you.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank
I missed you.
Very kind.
So, Gizmo or Gadget today? Which will it be?
I'm going to do a 2-for-1. I'm going to do two holiday gadgets.
Oh, I like that. Good.
Yeah. All right.
Can you identify this song in two notes, Dickie D?
No, I can't.
It's Boogie Oogie Oogie?
Oh, yes, okay. Boy, you are good.
Ooh, I was a DJ for so long. I played all these songs. This was Chic, right? No, who did Boogie Oogie Oogie?
No, I think it was.
Taste of Honey, that's it. It's that, but I think it must be Nile Rodgers doing that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm talking with my old disco buddy here, Dick D. Bartolo, Mads, maddest writer. I saw a picture of you with a tiger on the internet.
Oh, yes. That was back in the days when we were doing a show called That's My Line, not What's My Line, That's My Line. And a man had a detector that detected how frightened you were.
This is typical TV producer. The guy says, exactly. All right, first of all, who can we scare? And second, how do we scare him?
Yes, exactly. They said, Dick, you like animals, right? I said, oh, what do you got? I love animals. They said, okay, you're going to be on television with an animal.
What could possibly go wrong?
It was
a tiger twice your size, and you were buff. You were not some little skinny runt there. You looked really good. Were you scared?
I was frightened a little because you never know if there's going to, you know, once I was on a show where we had a tiger and the stagehands dropped something steel in the back and that tiger just, fortunately, three people were holding. The tiger leaped and oh my word. Yeah.
So Dick joins us each week to talk about gadgets, gizmos. He's the Giz Whiz, as well as being Mad Magazine's maddest writer for many, many moons. You have something for the holidays for us, right?
I do, Leo. I saw this in August, and now I held on to it. They're called Christmas lights.
Times fast.
Yeah, exactly. So what they are ornaments that you put family pictures in. Now, you buy a kit and you get six of these ornaments, and then you go to their app, and the app will size the pictures to the exact size to fit into these ornaments. And then you get the print paper that has.
Oh, my, look.
That is pre-cut.
You're upside down. Turn it the other way.
You know, it's so funny. When you put it in front of your camera, you can't see
what
you're
doing. It's reversed, yeah. It looks like an Olympic medal, like the Winter Olympics.
You know what? I wear it to the office and tell people I won it. And then there's a hole in the back, and there are two little lugs. So you push a Christmas light through it. Any one of those little.
That's the name of our new podcast, Two Little Lugs.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
No, I'm joking.
No, but it's good. You and Patrick Norton.
I think
I like it.
Two little lugs. Yeah. Two big lugs.
So, yeah. And then it'll be lit from the back, and the pictures are interchangeable. So if different relatives are coming over, you can quickly just swap all the pictures, and they'll be so impressed when they come in and go, we're on your Christmas tree.
Now, you buy them in sets of six. Can you put six different pictures, or is it all the same?
Yes, exactly.
Picture?
No, oh. six different. Yes, exactly. So it's six ornaments with six different photos.
Oh, nice.
And it goes over six different lights, and then they're lit from the back. It's very clever. It's $30.
I like this idea. And, of course, if you want a link to the impossible-to-pronounce Twistmas lights, you can get that at gizwiz.biz, Dick's website. You said you had two things, though.
Yeah, yes. The other thing, Leo, I found it's two women who invented this. I thought it's so clever. It's called Chalk of the Town.
Chalk of the town.
Chalk, not talk of the town, chalk of the town. And they had T-shirts with little miniature blackboard sections on them. And then they come with a marker. If you're going to a rally or you're going to a show or you want to write happy birthday to people.
Whatever you want. You just write it on there. Whatever you want.
Exactly. And it stays on. You can erase parts of it with the erase cloth that comes with it. But if you want to start over, throw it in the washing machine and your blackboard comes out blank.
But it's fairly indelible, so it's not just going to smudge off as you walk around.
No, the woman showed me several. She said, Dick, we've taken these to shows now for 6 months, and they still look brand new.
I like this idea.
Yeah, it's very clever. Very clever.
You know, it'd be great for like a 9, 10, 11-year-old, right?
Absolutely. Although I said, you have an adult size? And they said, well, we're coming out with
it. Do they have XXL? Chalk, it'd be a really big chalkboard. Chalk-of-the-town.com.
They're working on that, getting something better. But chalk,
that's all right. It'll work. It works.
I have a link to it, too.
All right. Yeah, that's the best thing to do. Go to Dick's website. Everybody should go there anyway, because it's a chance. It's kind of your last chance.
Yes.
To win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine, go to Giz, G-I-Z, Wiz, W-I-Z, Biz, B-I-Z, dot. No, wait a minute. Go to G. How long have we been doing this? G-I-Z, W-I-Z, dot, B-I-Z. There you go. There's no dot com. It's just dot biz. Exactly. And when you get there, you want to click the what the heck is it? You can. Well, first of all, if you want to get links to those products, click the picture of my head. Which is oddly satisfying. And then if you want to play the What the Heck Is It contest, click Dick's head, and you can see some close-up of a gizmo or a gadget, some sort of clip thing. I don't know. Anyway, if you get it right, there's 12 autographed copies of Mad Magazine. Can we show this cover now? Is it okay?
Yes. It's been released. Huffington Post had the exclusive last week, so now anybody can see it.
All right. So you can win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine, or... you get it wrong and you have a better chance of winning. And that's pretty typical for Dick. It's just crazy rules all over the place.
Yeah, I reward stupidity.
Yeah.
Because it runs in the family.
Gizwiz.biz. Don't forget his podcast, too. Two Lugs and a Nut.
I like that, too.
Yeah, that's a good one. Gizwiz.tv for his podcast. Hey, perfect. Thanks, Dickie D.
Okay, buddy. I'll see you next time.
All right. Have a great week. Okay. One last call before we go. Philip, Dallas, Texas. Hi, Philip.
Yes, sir. Question regarding the OneDrive on Windows 10.
Yeah.
I really didn't pay attention to that when I first started using the Windows 10, and suddenly I started getting these messages saying that their OneDrive's full. And I went to see what was going on and found out that the thing had overloaded and filled up, and they're wanting to sell me more space.
Yeah, and it's just like what I was talking about with Apple doing the same thing, right? It drives me nuts.
I really didn't want it.
Here's what Microsoft says. There's a whole article, big letters, turn off OneDrive in Windows 10. And here's what it says in little letters. OneDrive's built into Windows 10, so you can't uninstall it like an app, but you can't hide it and stop syncing. And they have an article which really involves using some kind of fancier tools to turn it off. You have to unlink it and then uninstall it and blah, blah, blah. But I'm going to put that up on our show notes so you can follow along. And that's at techguylabs.com. And I don't blame you. OneDrive bugs you incessantly and then it fills up. And it's just, what are these companies? It feels like they're just trying to make money or something. Oh, I guess they are. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.